and also the regular. My name is Susan Gelan. Just for the record, I am standing for Honorable Ben Nicola Martin, who unfortunately had to take up a parliamentary trip to Ghana. I'm sure you would have been very keen to be with us when we're handling such a knockout and significant development tool in the CPI. Without wasting any time, we've already done a few minutes. We do have a couple of apologies. Dr. Ravi from Greg and Honorable Gali and we have a new or amended resolution to see that they will put on the table for me. There are just a few things I'm sure delegation from you guys will let the well change up. Without wasting any time, let us allow I'm switching off my cell phone and I start and hope you all will go. Yes, Daddy Martin. Oh, I don't know. He will join us. Tell me why you have to attend.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity to come in and discuss the export strategy. I'd like to introduce my colleague Rian Leroux, who is the Chief Director responsible for exports within the Trade and Investment South Africa division of the DTI. And together we will present this morning to you. I would just like to locate this presentation in a particular context. We have circulated the export strategy document, which has been circulated. And you will notice that the document was in fact authored last year. And this was done, it was a parallel process that we were working on while we were developing also the industrial policy framework. But in terms of sequencing, we wanted to release the industrial policy document first, and then the export strategy, and the next document that we will release will be the investment strategy, and we look forward to an opportunity to come and discuss that with you as well. Honourable members, this morning, this will be the content of our presentation. We initially did we were supposed to present this on a previous occasion, and we had circulated a presentation which ran into some 50 slides. But we've condensed the presentation today into a much smaller presentation, but not taking away from the impact of what we want to say. We will be, in order to develop the export strategy, we conducted some far-reaching analysis and studies to really look at what is the status of our export situation in South Africa. And the reality is this, and this is the backdrop against what this presentation is located. We have about 2,000 or so registered exporters in South Africa. But an economy of our size should have between 6,000 to 8,000 exporters. Now, the reason for a few exporters is because we have a limited manufacturing base. It's because of concentration issues that we inherited about the structure of the economy. So the best way that we can enhance our export performance is in fact to have more exporters and therefore have more manufacturers and therefore have more competition to allow more manufacturers to come in into the marketplace. And previously, the exports, we would export pretty much anything. We would sell anything to anybody. But we felt that we need to have a more focused and much more targeted approach to our export strategy. And in that context, we worked with the University of Northwest to develop an economic model that can identify for us what are the key markets that we should target and what are the key products that we should be targeting in those key markets. We cannot sell everything to everybody, and therefore we would have a better utilization and allocation of our resources if we were more targeted in our approach. That's the backdrop against what this presentation is set up against, and some of that analysis will come through. We look at the perspectives on the foreign trade, we look at our current status, what is our trade looking like right now. We look at the global best practice, and then we inform the strategic direction of the export strategy. We talk about the structure of our strategy and the process that we went in to develop the strategy. We talk about the export value chain, and we identify the strategic themes within the export strategy. And then we also talk about the performance and evaluation and how we can measure the performance. And then we'll talk about the export development and promotion value chain. Now, honorable members, as you may see, that the industrial policy framework is the overriding directive for us. The export strategy cannot be developed in isolation of where our industrial policy is headed towards. Within the industrial policy, Within the industrial policy, there are some lead sectors that have been identified. And we, in the DTI, we have clustered these sectors into the sectors as you see: capital and transport equipment and metals, automotive and components, chemicals, plastic fabrication and pharmaceuticals, forestry, pulp, paper and furniture. And within those sectors, there are key action programs to promote each of those sectors. Now, we have to take the industrial policy and then bring policy coherency, because our trade policy has to speak to the industrial policy. Trade policy is a tool that informs and supports the industrial policy framework. Within the trade policy, of course, we have the export strategy and the investment strategy, as you can see. But for today's discussion, we are focusing on the blue boxes, on the export strategy. Therein, we talk about how we prioritize markets, what we are doing around the development of exports, and to get more exporters into the fold, and what our export promotion strategy will be. As I indicated, the National Industrial Policy Framework is the foundation of all policies and strategies administered by the DTI. Nations that do not have policies that drive international competitiveness will not survive in the global trading arena. That is a clear fact of life. That is something that comes straight up in our analysis and research and doing best practice studies. South Africa has very strong trade policy initiatives that must be applied to gain better market access for South African products and services. And to that end, we can look at the market access agreements and the strategies we have for gaining market access. With our existing and ongoing negotiations, existing being our trade agreements with the European Union, the AGOA market access, SADC, Free Trade Protocol, SACU, Mercosur, EFTA, and the ongoing negotiations with India and proposed negotiations with China. Once all those have been concluded, we will offer preferential market access to markets of over 3 billion people for South African exports. So having the market access is only one step, but being able to leverage and export and gain on the market access is a challenge for us. Successful emerging economies have also linked up their export and investment strategies to ensure continued growth. I must make the point that our investment strategy and our export strategy cannot be too far apart from each other. We promote investment to bring in manufacturing capacity into the country, not simply to supply the local market, which really isn't big enough, but we make it attractive for foreign companies to locate in South Africa so they can export their products to global markets. So investment and export have to talk to each other. And the world as we know it is going to change drastically over the next few decades. It has already changed drastically over the last decade or two since our own democracy, and we are convinced that it's going to change even more in the next 4 decades or so. And we will talk a little bit about that, because it is a changing world that informs our strategy. It is therefore imperative that South Africa start the process now to understand where we should focus our efforts in the global economic environment over the next decade or so. Honourable members, this is a very brief graphical sort of display of how we have been informed in our thinking. This is a very interesting program on a website called World Mapper. And what it does, it exaggerates the shape and size of countries and continents to make particular points. So, in terms of the world population, say 2,000 years ago, as you can see, North America, South America were very skinny because they were not so populated. Whereas China and India, Europe and Africa are quite bulging. And clearly, as we know, that China and India are the world's most populous countries. So 2,000 years ago, that's what the world looked like from an exaggerated graphic size. World population in 1900. As you can see, America had been occupied. Europeans had occupied America and South America. So this is a representation in 1900 what the world looked like. This is all leading towards our conclusion. In 1960, as you can see, Africa is still very skinny. So in terms of our size and landmass, Africa has always had a smaller population. But India and China are still quite big. And this is what the future looks like. Based on current trends today, this is what the world population in 2050 would look like. And as you can see, Africa takes on significance in this structure and look. Now, this is very interesting. This is what the wealth of the world looked like in 1990. In 1990, as you can see, as we all know, America, one of the richest nations on earth, is bulging relative to its population size that we saw earlier. As you can see, the purple on the extreme right is Japan, quite big relative to size. And India, it's a more recognizable shape in terms of wealth, not that good. But Africa, see how skinny Africa is. And that is a reflection of really what we have today. The purple and the blue on the top in the middle is Europe, and the blue is Russia. Now, this is 1990, so 17 years ago, what the wealth situation in the world looked like. But given the dynamics today, we forecast what the world would look like in 2050. And this is predominantly what informs our strategy. In 2050, that is what the world is supposed to look like. America, very skinny. On the green on the left, that's Venezuela and Brazil. The rest of Latin America is quite skinny. In Africa, that bulge in the bottom is Southern Africa. It's static, pretty much. The bulge in the pink in the bottom, that is Southern Africa. The green is India and China, and the blue is Russia. And this, in fact, does reflect what is going on in the world today. It is a reflection of the decline in the U.S. economy, and it is a reflection of the rise of the Asian economies and the future of Africa. Just to go back to this, the population of 2050, the dark burgundy almost in the Africa map to the on the left side, that in fact represents the DRC. It is predicted that the DRC will be the ninth most populous country in the world by 2050. And as we all know, the DRC is far much more endowed with mineral resources and wealth than South Africa is. And hopefully over the next 2 decades in the exploitation of those, the wealth will be reflected in that static picture. So this is what the world is going to look like in the future, and therefore we have to inform our export strategies in line with something like this. Now these maps may be controversial to the extent that one likes or does not like the answers that are presented here. That's the newly sort of the Central Asian Republic, the CIS state. The dark blue is Russia. You see, Honorable Chair, the CIS states are richly endowed with oil. And that oil and mineral wealth is only now being exploited. Exactly. So they will be the future powerhouses. Now, in terms of our global trade, these are the main sort of trading partners that we have around the world. The main partners. Now, 39% of our trade is with Europe at the moment. So, we have categorized the global markets in terms of high growth markets, markets that we need to sustain and maintain, where we've reached sort of a saturation point. Also, our strategy in terms of markets is that not to put all our eggs in one basket. If you just take the example of, say, the tragic events of 9/11, where there was an economic shock in the U.S., the impacts were felt into those economies that were deeply integrated into the U.S. economy. So, as a result of a tragic accident in the U.S., there was job losses in Australia, see, because of the deep linkages between those two economies and companies there. So any shock that is felt in any part of the world can impact on us if we have all our eggs in that basket. So we would like to diversify our risk and spread them across the market. So Europe is sustained and maintained. Almost 13% of our trade is with North America, USA and Canada. And that again is a sustain and maintain market, because the American economy is going through some challenges at the moment, and the outlook is not looking very positive for the U.S. economy in the near term. Almost 25% is with Asia, but it's a high growth market for us, in spite of the fact that 25% of our trade is in Asia. Almost 4.5% of our trade is with the Middle East and Gulf states. That again is a high growth area, particularly because of the investment opportunities. Now this is 1.4% of our trade is with South America. Again, it's a high growth opportunity, untapped potential. 15% of our trade is on the continent. Again, this is going to be a high growth area for us to look at. 2.7% of our trade is with Australia. Now, interestingly, Australia is sustained and maintained. Even though it's less than 3%, it's not a big market. It's a country of 20 million people. But, interestingly, if you look at it, it's almost twice our trade of South America. Australia, a market of 20 million people, we have double the trade that we have in a continent of almost a billion people. So clearly, there is a mismatch there. But it also reflects the traditional structure of our trade and traditional partners that South Africa has had. This is a perspective on our foreign trade this year from in the first half of the year. So, as you can see, exports and imports have both been growing. Imports have been growing slightly more, and this does raise, in some quarters, the concern about the current account deficit. But again, I would just like to make a point that we are an economy in transition. We are an evolving economy. We are not a mature economy yet. So the current account deficit should be taken in a particular context. And if you look at the recent, if the shareholders prove it, the recent Standard Bank ICBC transaction would bring in 36 billion rand in foreign exchange. And that's almost 3 months worth of forex that we would get in one transaction. Things like that can really address the current account deficit issue. So we shouldn't be too overly concerned about the current account deficit. We need to locate it in the context that we are an economy in transition and in transformation. Also, a lot of the imports that we did receive were in the area of capital goods. Now those imports are used for manufacturing processes. So we have seen an upturn in manufactured exports as a result of capital goods imports. And this is the structure of our exports. The light blue, almost teal color bars represent manufacturing exports. Agriculture exports have been relatively small. Mining, as you can see, which is traditionally a strong leader, is no longer the case. And then out of manufacturing, we've selected automotive, for example, motor vehicles. And as you can see, motor vehicles have been steadily increasing. And as we get more and more OEM investment in South Africa, we see that motor vehicle exports will increase further over time. We are not so proficient in the export of capital goods and technology goods, which shows us that there are huge opportunities in those areas, because we do have pockets of excellence in those areas in South Africa, and we need to promote them further. And this is the structure of our imports. Again, as you can see, the highest area of imports is in manufacturing, and that speaks to the point I made earlier, that we have a lack of competition, we have a lack of diversity in manufacturing, and therefore we continue to import manufactured products. And of course, technology products dominate as well on import. But the main point we wanted to make here was the high value of our manufactured imports. These are our top 20 export destinations. You can see Japan, United States, United Kingdom and Germany, Netherlands, China, quite low down. The highest ranked African country is Zambia, and despite the economic challenges in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe still features in our top 20. So we have four African countries in our top 20 as export markets, Mozambique and Angola being the other two. But India and China present the biggest opportunity for moving up the scale. Our top 20 import origins: Germany, which is the world's largest exporter, so no surprises there. China, quickly catching up on that. United States, Japan, Saudi Arabia, very interesting, but that is oil. So, but as we diversify, Iran as well, that is again oil, it's energy related. And Nigeria being the only sort of African country that is a major top 20 exporter into South Africa. Now, this is interesting to note. The table on the left looks at export composition of exports in 1990, and the one on the right looks at 15 years later the composition of exports. 63% of our exports were in precious metals, iron and steel, and mineral fuels. So basically, primary products in 1990. That's what it was. 15 years later, 46% of our exports were in the primary area, which shows that in the manufacturing segment, we have moved up the value chain. If you look at the green on the left, machinery, vehicles, aluminium and articles, ranking 8, 16 and 17 respectively, they have moved up to numbers 4, 5 and 7. So it shows how our manufacturing exports have grown. The orange bars on the right represent the big opportunity that we have and big movers as well. So the economy has diversified in terms of its structure of exports. Now, any strategy that the department develops must clearly be located within its own realm of influence. We can only influence so much, and our strategy must only speak to that what we can influence. The preconditions to export growth are that we need enhanced competitiveness through the industrial policy and the sector development strategy. That is critical. We need to focus on key high growth markets rather than doing everything for everybody. And we need to enhance our market access into these markets. So, coupled with our efforts in WTO negotiations, also bilaterally, we need to pursue preferential market access. We need to ensure that the export community has access to world-class information and data. And this is a real challenge in South Africa, that our export community are not aware or not educated enough by design or by default on opportunities around the world. We need to grow the exporter base, particularly SMEs and black exporters. There are virtually hardly any black exporters. And in growing the exporter base, by we are also de facto saying that we need to grow the manufacturing base in the economy. So one of the key focuses in the industrial policy is to grow manufacturing among black manufacturers and SMEs. We need to align the export community, the DTI, and the foreign offices in an effective value chain of action. So I may just indicate that in 2005, South Africa participated in a trade fair in India where we were the partner country to India. So we had to have a very high profile stand. And when we went to the export community and said we would like companies to participate, to accompany us to India, we were quite horrified to be told that only two companies were interested in going to India. Out of 2,000 companies that we have, only two companies were ready to go. We found that quite disconcerting, and in fact, it showed a total lack of initiative on the part of the export community. We in turn then went knocking door to door to companies, because not all companies are a part of export councils. And we ended up taking 70 companies to India. And every one of those companies regretted not having been to that market before. And every one of those companies has had a successful engagement and entry into that market. So, the export council, the export community, manufacturers need to take a look at the world beyond the traditional market that they've been exporting to. And we are not aligned. I'll be the first to admit it, that we are not aligned between the export community and our strategies. So part of our strategy is to educate and share our perspective of what we have found in our global analysis, and hopefully the export community will come on board. Again, the DTI foreign offices and the DFA missions around the world will work in concert to promote our exports. So we will be looking at 115 missions around the world, plus DTI officers, all focused on promoting the export strategy. We also need to ensure that the export community has access to finance to market themselves more effectively abroad. And here we are talking about a range of instruments that the DTI offers, exports, marketing assistance, and other schemes we have for new exporters to be able to travel to pavilions and trade shows and to be able to market their products around the world. Now, the elements of the design of the National Export Strategy, there are 10 elements, and on the left-hand side are the best practice, what we should do, and on the right-hand side is how we as South Africa have responded to the best practice requirements. So, the first is that you need to link the export strategy to wider national goals and policies, and that is clearly what we are doing. We have the DTI objective. We have the Accelerated and Shared Growth Initiative and the Industrial Policy and Investment Strategy, all of which inform our export strategy. So the export strategy is not located in some sort of surreal context. It is located directly in these areas of ASVISA, Industrial Policy, and the objectives of the DTI, which is to create growth in the economy, to increase employment, and to spread equity in the economy. Also to promote exports and to grow the base of enterprises in the economy. So those are the five objectives. The next best practice element is that we need to secure prominent endorsement and get the political commitment and the will behind it. And to that end, the Minister of Trade and Industry is the champion in driving this process forward. So we have the political will to drive this agenda forward. We need to have a vision. And in that regard, we are responding by saying that our vision is to ensure consistent export growth into high potential markets, into targeted markets. So, best practice suggests we need a slogan. At the moment, our draft slogan is from local to global, something to get our export community excited and drive get them behind. Another best practice element is establishing partnerships between the public and private sector. And we have, in fact, got the Export Council, we have provincial agencies, we have the Chambers of Commerce, we have other business groupings, and as I've indicated, although these structures have existed, we may not have worked all that well with each other in the past, and we are now trying to harmonize and make sure that we all work together, and to that end we have what we call the Team South Africa approach. We need to formalize partnerships that we talked about earlier. To that end, we have just gone through an exercise with the Export Council where we have asked them, in fact, from the time the Export Council was established till today, we have not been happy with the outcome. They have not transformed the base of exporters. There are very few, if any. In fact, in the Export Council, there are no BEE representatives. And transformation, we have put on the agenda very strongly for them. And we have tied them down to performance agreements. So their budget, their resources will be based on performance. We need to confirm resources. In order to have a best practice strategy, you need to have certainty of resources and allocation of good people to fulfill the task. To that end, we have responded by creating a dedicated and well-resourced export development and promotion unit. Best practice also suggests that we need to prioritize industry and prioritize sectors. That's something we spoke about earlier. We cannot do everything for everybody. We need to be clearly focused in those areas that we have comparative and competitive advantage. And those are the lead sectors as defined by the National Industrial Policy Framework. We need to be able to, under best practice, to collate and disseminate information. To that end, we are developing the National Trade Information System. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but it is an information base to provide as much information to as wide a range of stakeholders as possible. So that information is not kept in some documents and some dusty shelves somewhere, but in fact it is out there to be able to be used by economic citizens. And clearly, one of the elements of a best practice is that we need to have a review process in place so we can monitor and evaluate what we have been doing. And to that end, we have a performance management system that will actually gauge how successful we are or not. So, this is our strategic vision, that by 2014, South Africa, from a globally competitive base directed by best practice, industrial policy and sector development strategy, will be able to maintain market share in traditional markets and substantially increase its market share in prioritized new high-growth markets through aggressive marketing and a larger exporter community that includes black exporters from marginalized and depressed areas in South Africa. So, this is not only looking at the export of a high-value manufactured product, but also labor-intensive products, and we're looking for market access and export opportunities in those areas. So the strategic direction of the export strategy is to align the relevant divisions of the DTI around the key objectives of strategic interventions of this strategy. We need to ensure policy coherence. This is something that we need to be cognizant of at all times, that we have policy coherence within the DTI and with the DTI and the rest of government, especially those departments represented in the economic cluster. We need to build consensus amongst our external stakeholders. We need to build export awareness and create an export culture. Clearly, we do not have an export culture if we only have 2,000 or so registered exporters. We need to provide clients with a clear understanding of the strategic interventions of the DTI, including the priorities of export, promotion, and development. We need to provide clients with a clear understanding of the service offerings available to exporters and to prospective exporters. We need to increase exports in targeted priority markets and the number of exporters, which, as I indicated, is too few at the moment. We, in fact, need to almost double and triple the size of our exporter base. And in this area, in the doubling and tripling, our focus is going to be on SMEs and BEE enterprises. So we also need to improve export participation in geographically marginalized and economically depressed areas within South Africa. And this, again, speaks to the geographic spread agenda within the industrial policy framework. Now, in terms of the export strategy value chain, this is really, we have the key processes on the left and in the middle the theme. The key processes, we need to be competitive. So we have to drive competitiveness. Competitiveness, in turn, will inform and drive our market penetration, export development, and export promotion. So we get the market access, we develop our exporters, and then we promote those exports. And the themes are informed by the industrial policy, as you can see. And then market penetration is informed by country prioritization, as we talked about earlier. We will also mention at the end some of the key countries that, what are the key countries that we have targeted and what are the key products that we have targeted. So country prioritization and market access. Export development is informed by our National Trade Information System and our Exporter Development Program. And export promotion is informed by our export mechanisms and our financial instruments. Financial instruments being the support that we provide to exporters. So all of this is underpinned by performance measurement, management, and review. And that is informed by the global economic environment. So, the global economic environment is not static. And as it is not static, the rest of the areas will also have to respond to the global environment. We cannot have our own teams and processes located in a static environment. So, the first theme, as you can see from the previous slide, competitiveness. When we talk of competitiveness, the export strategy starts with the foundation created by the Industrial Enterprise and Industrial Development Division of the DTI, which designed the National Industrial Policy Framework and progresses through a range of additional measures to increase South Africa's export performance. The industrial policy does speak to issues of competitiveness. In the area of competitiveness, we also need to address critical pricing structures and efficiency. It is no secret that pricing structures in South Africa are very high, input costs are very high because of concentration, because of monopolies and oligopolies, particularly in selected services subject to the administered pricing, import parity pricing in critical upstream sectors. We need to develop and deepen industrial capabilities, particularly in world-class manufacturing and technological deepening and transfer. We need to implement sector development strategies and programs. And the outcome, if we are successful in the competitiveness arena, the outcome will be enhancing industry competitiveness to compete in global markets. If we are not globally competitive, we can forget about competing in export markets. The second theme is market penetration, determining priority markets. Now, in the past, the lack of a scientific decision support model on prioritizing markets and products resulted in a shotgun approach to export. So essentially, anybody could come with any product to the DTI and say, I want to sell this, and we would try to assist them to sell it anywhere, without even maybe having an understanding of whether that product is relevant for that particular market. So we felt we need to have a more scientific approach to deciding on priority markets and products. So we created an econometric model by engaging with the University of Pretoria and University of North West. And that model is managed by the External Relations and Policy Coordination Unit in the Office of the Director General in the DTI. In this arena, we also provide real-time intelligence from export councils and foreign offices to support the model. As we indicated earlier, the global environment is very fluid, so we need real-time intelligence on opportunities as they may arise. And we need to be able to filter that quickly, because it is no good that information residing with our foreign offices. That information needs to come back home as quickly as possible to be filtered into the export community. A single integrated country product matrix, indicating priority countries with high penetration potential. Again, the integrated country product matrix is a model that will tell us, and it does tell us very specifically, we can in fact do a whole presentation just on that model. It tells us what are the countries that we should be selling products to and what products we should sell. So, for example, let's say we sell 10,000 units of these CD-ROMs, for example, to China. But in fact, China consumes 1 million of these units. So the model will tell us, in fact, that we can increase our sales to China. There may be products that we supply, for example, we may supply to China, but there may be 10 other countries that could also buy these products if we don't have an idea about them. And the model will tell us that. So the model actually tells us, for each country, what are the products? So, for example, with China, it breaks it right down to an HS4. Yeah? To an HS4 level, that we have 259 product possibilities for China, as an example. If we are successful again in this scheme, the outcome will be determining high potential, high yield markets on a scientific basis. It won't be based on emotion. It won't be based on the fact that there are traditional relationships between the exporter and the buyers on the other side. It will be scientific. There will be clear indications on where to situate our foreign offices. Again, if you notice our current structure of foreign offices, we have a high concentration of offices in Europe, and we have very few offices in Asia, in Africa. We have very few offices in South America. So, this matrix, in fact, informs us where the opportunities are and where we should, in fact, locate our foreign offices. and we will get optimal usage out of the financial instruments of the DTI, like EMEA, to target predetermined foreign markets with instruments like national pavilions and missions. We host national pavilions around the world, and again, historically, we've had a large number of these national pavilions being hosted in Europe. But clearly, the market opportunities are in Asia, Africa, and South America. So this will inform our new directive. Now, the country product matrix value chain, how does it work? The first phase, bottom left, phase one, is that we get our results from the decision support model. That's like econometric model. Next phase, we take the statistical analysis on our current export. We look at our current structure. Then we will eliminate products that are known to have barriers. In certain markets, there are certain access barriers. Of course, the model that we have does not tell us about barriers. It just tells us what products we should sell where. And then we need to prioritize based on barriers, non-tariff barriers and tariff barriers. And after we put that filter through, phase four, is that we have a draft country matrix. From the draft country matrix, we then get feedback from industry, because we then take it back and we tell industry, this is what our analysis is telling us. Industry needs to give us feedback. We get feedback from the foreign offices. And then we finally, after consultation, we develop the final country product matrix. We have targeted to conclude that by the end of this month, and we're happy to say that we are firmly on track to achieve that target. And then by April 1 next year, we will have a joint export promotion plan between industry and the DTI. So, once we get the final country product matrix from industry, we will then, over the next 4 months, develop a joint plan with industry and DTI. And then we will execute it. And then the next phase, of course, after that, is to get the feedback from the evaluation and the feedback from the decision support model, and then feed it back in, and then repeat the cycle again. So we are continually engaged and interacting with our stakeholders to continually be fluid and refined in our analysis. On the market access. To be successful there, the DTI market access programs have created and are still creating preferential market access for South African goods and services in key markets of over 3 billion people around the world, as I alluded to earlier. Here we are, the key countries and regions, the expanded EU, EFTA, which is the European Free Trade Association. Those are the four countries that did not form part of the European Union, namely Norway, Iceland, Switzerland, and Liechtenstein. We have India and China. India is ongoing. China will be, after this round of negotiations with India, we will look at China. Mercosur, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Brazil. The USA to Goa. And Africa, in line with the NEPAD framework, the SACU and SADC trade protocol. So all of this combines to give us access to over half the world population, which is plenty of market access for South African exporters. They won't be able to penetrate those markets for decades to come. So clearly, there is no shortage of preferential market access. Now, the challenge is for South African manufacturers and export community to deliver on the product. And the outcome would be increased access for South Africa products in priority markets. In fact, it should be increased preferential access as opposed to simply access. It's on a preferential basis. Now, the export development side. The National Trade Information System. Because of a lack of a national integrated strategy for export information delivery, it led to the proliferation of export development entities and export information services. So there's a lot of information and a lot of services, a lot of people doing work in the export arena, but totally uncoordinated. The roles and responsibilities of all these stakeholders need to be formalized to ensure effective and coordinated development and management of export information services. Export information services can be the number one catalyst for promoting export growth. And here the DTI will lead by extending its export information service nationally through a portal. We will be creating on the DTI website a specific portal that will provide export leads and export-based information. We also envision that we will have a trading site on our website where traders, importers and exporters from around the world, particularly focused on South African manufacturers, can come together to inform themselves of opportunities. The GCI will also facilitate collaboration on and consolidation of information with other entities. Because there are a lot of entities around the world that provide information on export opportunities, and we need to get the best practice, get the best information, collate it and provide it to our South African exporters. And we will develop a strategy for the standardization and organization of export information delivery across the various entities, so that we are all harmonized and coordinated and we don't speak at cross purposes. The outcome will be a web-based system to deliver quality information that enables the export community to make informed decisions. We are also, Honorable Chair, if I may mention, going to be presenting to Cabinet very soon a proposal to set up a call center in the DTI that will be focused on assisting investors and exporters. Separate from the one that exists. So, strategic theme number 5, which is a small export and development program. Now here, the red, amber and green is done on purpose. It's sort of like a ready, steady go, a traffic light signal. So, TISA, the Department of the Trade and Investment South Africa Division of GCI, which has the National Export Promotion Strategy, the Small Exporter Promotion, working with provinces and international partners like the ITC, International Trade Center, and CDI of Holland, will work with the Single Enterprise Development Agency, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, CEDA, to identify service providers, business partners, and will help companies to become export ready. We'll then also, so the strategic support will come from TISA. The export training and education will come from partnerships with TISA and CEDA. And the technical assistance is provided by the range of agencies, by the Council of Trade and Industry Institutions, the COTIs. Specifically, the CSIR, CEDA, South African Bureau of Standards. And therein, the technical assistance will focus on export readiness enhancement, product quality improvement, product innovation, productivity assessment, establishment of quality management systems and procedures, establishment of management systems and procedures, and quality improvement and cost control. These are all very important if you want to be competitive as an exporter. So once all those pre-steps have been completed, we then go into the advice and mentoring phase again. TISA plays a critical role there with TAO, which is the enterprise organization, the division in the GTI responsible for incentives, and with CEDA. Here we will provide export information. We will do company visits to make sure the companies are equipped to export. We will help them develop export marketing plans, and we will help them participate in local exhibitions. And then, the green light, they're ready to go. International market development. TISA, again, plays a role with TAO and CEDA, where we will help the companies to participate in trade fairs and exhibitions. We will help them to participate in trade missions, to conduct market research. Our foreign offices and export councils will also play a critical role in this area. Export finance, we will look at the financial instruments that the DTI offers, credit guarantee schemes, EMEA, which helps with pre and post shipment. So that's the finance challenge that a lot of exporters face. We aim to bridge that gap. And then finally, we have to do a performance evaluation. So we look at the whole cycle. So a company comes in at the first red block, moves through the cycle, and then we evaluate the success. Here, we have a target that we want to have 100 new exporters. And we're looking at 11. Yeah, 11 priority sectors and 5 per sector and 5 per province. We have 55 plus 45, 100 exporters, new exporters that we want to bring online. Right now we have? Last year we did 70 exporters, and as we stand today we have 170 exporters. So we are well on track in this area. And it just shows that because we have such a shortage of exporters, that we are able to double our expectations in terms of bringing new exporters into the fold.
Sorry, can you give me the figures last year you had?
Last year we had 70 new exporters, 70. And year to date, this year, we are standing on 170. So we have surpassed our own target that we have set. And again, the outcome of this export development value chain will be that we will grow the exporter base through training and development. So there are a lot of people ready to export, but they just don't have the right training, and they don't have the right exposure. So there are a lot of companies that we just need to do a little bit of work. Of course, there are many companies we need to do a lot of work with. On the export promotion side, currently there's a lack of coordinated approach to align the export community, as I mentioned, the export promotion sector desks in CISA and the foreign offices. So basically, what we're saying is that the foreign offices, the CISA desk, and the export community are all speaking across purposes. They're not aligned. So we are going to align the private sector project with export promotion trusted desk and the foreign offices. We're going to build capacity of the export promotion trusted desk. So to that end, within the GTI, we are improving and expanding on that area of building this capacity. And we are going to ensure that the foreign offices deliver more effectively by a continuous flow of quality market intelligence. So, of course, the quality of the information we get from our foreign offices is directly related to the quality and caliber of our people and the training that they receive. We need to process more high potential trade needs, and we need to manage national pavilions to best practice standards. The outcome here will be that we would have an effective sales channel in export value chain that enhances deal making and proactive information sharing. The EMEA instruments are designed for the DTI's export-ready clients. Yeah. Export marketing and investment assistance. That's the most common scheme that most companies use to participate in international fairs and exhibitions. But as we indicate there, it is designed for the DTI's export-ready clients. And now, we need to develop, and the DTI is developing new instruments for export promotion and development in order to address the needs of emerging exporters. So, export ready is one batch, but then there's still that batch that needs to become export ready. And we have new instruments that we've designed to assist those emerging exporters. We'll be implementing the Capital Goods Feasibility Fund to full potential. And we will cooperate with the IDC to fine-tune the existing pre- and post-shipment finance instruments to address the needs of emerging exporters. Here, it is worth mentioning that the IDC only provides that service when the value is over 500,000 rand. So the challenge is, what do you do for those exporters whose pre- and post-shipment needs are less than 500,000 rand? To that end, within the DTI, we have developed instruments to address those needs. The outcome in this area would be enhancing marketing and deal closing capabilities of exporters. Finally, on performance management. The process and customer service review will it's a cyclical, it's a continuous ongoing process where we look at the improvement initiatives. We have to drive and achieve process excellence. We review and update the process. We then look at the strategic impact, and that feeds into the performance feedback mechanism. And it's a cyclical thing. So it's basically action, feedback, and then ongoing action and feedback. Continuous operational improvement process. Performance management process. Establish performance management committee. And the objectives there would be to monitor the strategic themes that we just identified. And accordingly, the quarterly milestones. To review deviations and to recommend corrective action. And alert the committee to new opportunities and threats. And to ensure coordination across divisions. So we are institutionalizing the performance management system. The convener of this process will be the Chief Director of Exports, Rian Maru, sitting to my right. And the members of this committee will be the other Chief Directors within TISA, the Enterprise and Industrial Development Division, the International Trade and Economic Development Division, responsible for trade policy, the Enterprise Organization, responsible for incentives, and the External Relations and Policy Coordination and Marketing Unit. So, as you can see, in the past, the exports were really in the domain of TISA. But in order to drive policy coherency, we need to bring in the division dealing with industrial policy. We need to bring in the division dealing with trade policy. We need to bring in the division designing and developing our incentives. And the division that monitors and manages our econometric model. And also the general manager from CEDA and IDC. So all the critical stakeholders will form part of this committee. It will meet once a quarter on the 15th before the end of the quarter. And the secretariat support will be provided by TISA. So it's a rather busy slide this, but in a nutshell, this is the export development and promotion value chain. We were aiming to have that orange look more red, so it would be ready, steady, go. Red, amber, and green. So we take, if you're not export ready, to the amber being you're ready, but you're not exporting, and then the green is you are exporting. And the various agencies that come into play. In fact, we've discussed most of this already in the other slide, but just for expediency, CEDA will help companies to become export ready and do their export readiness assessment. They'll be able to provide desktop assessments. They'll be able to do site audits, productivity improvements, marketing support, and training. TAIL, the enterprise organization responsible for incentives, will be able to provide assistance for individual exhibitions and sector-specific assistance that we have. We have the sector-specific assistance team. And PMR, which is primary market research. All of those things will help companies to get ready for exporting. And then on the exporting side, on the ready-to-export and exporting side, TISA will play a critical role there. We will help with export development. And under export development, there's a range of areas. We provide trade statistics, exporter database, information on foreign companies, business opportunity center, market survey reports, country profiles, market access conditions, trade support institutions, export and roadmap, export publications, export incentives information, financial information, service providers, and the trade information portal. All of those combine to prepare companies to get ready to export, and then finally the green light, their export promotion is done through exhibitions, pavilions, missions, and advice and mentoring. Our foreign officers will play a role in providing the market prospects, the key contacts, the face-to-face briefings, visit information, and local information, and provide troubleshooting. again, cross-cutting right across the bottom, all those are the export support institutions. The Council of Trade and Industry Institutions, government departments, provincial agencies, our metros, our sector education training authorities, and the chamber movement. We have also brought, honorable members, some products. We have a couple of CDs. The CD that we have, just to give an example of some of the ideas we're talking about, Exporting Made Easy and Making the Most of Trade Fairs, product here, and Trade Secrets, Export Quality Management, another product that we have, and we have those for the members here today. Honorable Chair, thank you very much for your time and allowing us to present. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our professor here was yes, I can see. I'm so elated, this is the next question. The German I left there just a few years ago, Professor number 4, and I was having to graduate with Professor number 7. That means you move so fast.
How you should come on. You know how to move so fast. That kind of letting up.
Okay. Fine.
Perhaps we should have taken a leg stretch at that point.
I think we need to, I just need to have myself ready because I can see there's a lot of comments. I mean, you are the first, Professor Klang, the Rosine, Dr. Marker, when to be in that order, our yes, I said, no, you don't want to say, need to say that. I think that this is more respectful than honorable.
No, you want me to say formally.
Okay,
thanks, Jeff. Firstly, I want to welcome and thank you for the presentation. So my first issue with this document that I believe you have been the draft export strategy 2006 and 2009. Thanks to that particular draft, I'm not sure if you must tell us. Since we issued the draft of 2006, now we are 2007 already. When you put out the 9 years, I don't know what I think the draft. But just tell us the time frame is not taken, so that you don't know what the strategy is that going to implement. And how then it's going to implement. I'm raising this issue in the context of the two slides before the last slide. You refer to CEDAW, in terms of the reliance, in terms of CEDAW and capacity. Now, just to say to my comrade, honorable two members, if we are going to rely on these and others, maybe you are thinking for the results one way or another. But having said that, let me go to slide 12, page 6 of the presentation. Southern trade, global trade. We have that there is 9.2% in terms of the whole EU. And even saying further down that more concentration on US, even on EU, it tells the opposite, that everything is more concentration there than other countries. The third issue in terms of this South Cooperation, I want you to comment on that. Whether in terms of our concentration, we are neglecting this South Cooperation in terms of our approach. Having said that, again, the EU, there is a problem with it in terms of in terms of your current lack of coordination according to the Allied Export Committee, the Export Committee plan for that. I'm raising that in the context of the agricultural program. The very recently that the EU is going to suspend our export of all cities, region, because of testing problems. That we are, whether it's agriculture, whatever department that's supposed to give us, we have not yet done. As a result of that, the key is going to affect our media reporting. I want to hear a comment in terms of that particular issue in relation to the coordination of the activities between yourselves and others within the export industry. Having said that, I have seen of that with the question that you have on page 7, on second slide, is supposed to be slide number 14. Don't think that, but people know from page 12, that it was slide number 14, in terms of your export structure. That was said in relation to that, because there's been developing countries, what we call your India, your China, your Brazil. Your reflection here, there's not so much in terms of that, that what the inroads are making in terms of those particular countries. I want you to address us on that particular issue. You refer in terms of page 9, slide number 17. In terms of your top-grade import provision, so 6. I see then that in terms of profit Germany, again, that is continuous. I wonder if you could address us in terms of this G20. How do we link with this G20 in terms of our cooperation, in terms of the development? So, before the last issue, on page 10, that is slide number 19, it's a key observation. A focus on key high growth markets rather than doing everything for everyone. That's your breakpoint number 3. I want you to address that in terms of the present scenario. This question of doing everything for everyone. How can you assess that? Are we doing that? Or if that is the case, how can we change our approach in terms of doing everything for everyone? In terms of that the last red point there ensures that the export community has access to finance to market itself, monitor itself more. Who's supposed to finance that? Is that your leader again? That's the leader. Who's supposed to make sure that those things are done? And also for whose cost? And also the benefits. Which again links with the agricultural program, but where all the agricultural program is, which are the agricultural program. The last issue says you are just put it there with me. On your draft on page 54, I can see the same thing. Page 54. Chapter 6, strategy in 4. We talk about the offer, acting challenge. It must be for the national parameter in place to make the export community. Going to the city draft on page 4. I'm talking about strategy in 4 and under chapter 6, rather than what of day. That's over the act of acting challenge. And that was said in terms of that particular issue. How are you intending to deal with that particular issue in terms of sensitive people? I'm raising this information in terms of the intelligence. And we're told when we're dealing with people, remember, when we're dealing with that in terms of this intelligence information, that in terms of this depth around the world, find that you are being represented by the junior officials. As a result of that, the country that is supposed to deal with it, they are giving us a second or third hand information rather than to get what is supposed to get. So that's what takes in terms of my approach, how I dealing with that issue around this incredible information. So let me end there so that I allow other colleagues to deal with that. Take it to the last one. Team 5. You raise the weaknesses there. Page 62, paragraph 185. These weaknesses include poor understanding on the part of the small entities of the following issues. The required product, but it's the market potential.
Chapter 7?
Paragraph
185.
No, unless the copy of the document is the number. And the copy is the number. You are raising there 13 witnesses. These witnesses include one that is the part of the small entities of the Board of Jesus. Those few black boys, you know. Particularly, my interest is on market intelligence and, of course, the price, the product, quality. You know, I understand that this is a graph. These are the issues which are impacting on the presentation. This is the same deal for the presentation and the graph strategy. Thank you, sir. I'll come back to something later.
That's a quite a mouthful. I started to move the
I'm quiet because I just wanted to make sure that we have order. Maybe the best thing is just to say, Honorable Director, refer to page 62,
yeah.
And you are seeing this, paragraph 185,
okay. Yeah, right.
And yeah. Chapter 7.
Yeah, paragraph 7.
Does everybody have a document of that nature?
This person.
That when you go to page 62, you have chapter 7, paragraph 65.
Yeah.
It should be paragraph 187. I sincerely apologize for numbering. 185 is repeated. It's repeated.
No.
So the paragraph that the Honourable Member refers to is indeed 187 and not 187. That's reflected here on page
187 has a photo. I was even referring to 185 just to that we have to make sure. So we have to have the same recommendation. You see, there is also linked to the intelligence of the problem. If the draft document is numbered at 3, and the other people that are dealing with it are getting the next up at 3, what about the country dealing with them at the end of the day? Because I suppose they are too busy when they take their documents. But then
let's just before we leave the Babakari, I just wanted to make, think of something. You make reference to reliance on the CDP that has to go to the big
stuff. In fact, it's a question of reliance on the CDP that you asked on your, in terms of presentation. If you compare to the scheme, slide number 33, if you look at not a sport ready, if you look at that presentation on slide number 33 on page 20, he made reference to that one, that data we have created. So I'm talking in terms of that one. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the presenters. I'm very skeptical generally about PowerPoint presentations, but in this case your presentation I think is excellent and really made the document a lot more digestible, so my compliments on that. generally speaking, sounds very nice. And obviously we must support the export on confidence. One big problem I have is capacity of implementation. I mean your department of assessment is roughly 32% vacancy rate. We're going even wider now, more people. And I don't know what the impact of transformation policies on capacity when you leave in place vacant for ideological purposes, so that's going to be a problem, so it will be nice to see what happens. Looking through the slides of this here, this question is page 7. You know, now our motor vehicle exports have grown
very well. I'm just curious, what is the relationship with what we put in to them, like the thing, plus us, and what we're getting out? You know, if we're costing us billions and we're exporting hundreds of millions, I mean, what are the, how do you look at what benefits in the system like that? I don't know what, you know, sounds like we're exporting, but it's costing us millions to support the program design. A little on the other hand, in the product you've done is job creation as well. Then, the other thing that worries me is on page 8, I made a comment here. You see, exports are also going to be dependent on effective port and transport infrastructure. And you can't get your goods, or your goods arrive late, or they're clogged up with the terminals and the containers don't go out. That's how that has an impact on your export strategy. Let me go to my next notice on page 10. I know it sounds very nice. I won't comment Peter's already been covered. I think Peter's a problem. Just doing what it is, getting four businesses down. Now we're expecting them to run the export. You know, I have my doubts. Ideas good. Capacity is going to be a problem. Now we're going to grow the export as a base, particularly Indonesian black exports. Now, you know, we often read so much about, you know, the gap we have in this country, and we have, you know, for the usual suspects, there's a lot of these black mega billionaires. What are these black companies doing to assist small blacks? Are they looped into the chain? Or are they just running around the big things? Are they producing on the ground? Are we, and I mentioned names, we get off with those of them. What are they doing to stimulate small black business enterprise? How are we going to lock in? The other thing is, my experience in the past has often been, you know, the South African exports is by and large worth the effort export. You know, they suddenly have an overrun. Well, of course, I've got an extra couple of thousand widgets. Now I'm going to export. We run around looking for export models. As opposed to companies that are geared for export. You know, we manufacture for export. It's not a sort of an add-on. Are you addressing that situation? Because it's, you know, you must be an expert in export. It's not an add-on. The other thing is, when you look at slide 22 on page 11, and this is going to be, I think, a big problem here, build consensus among external stakeholders. You see, I've already addressed the question of your transport infrastructure. But, you know, education and skill are essential for manufacturing. How serious are you going to for example, tackle the Department of Labor on producing effective skills and getting rid of their trade? Now, this is an intergovernmental thing which is also really sensitive to certain facts, but the one can't exist without the other.
And that's been very important. Now, it also says on the same slide, you know, increased export stock and profit margins is the number of special focus of S&D and B enterprises. Again, one totally supports the idea, you know, the more companies, the better. My question is, how? That is the other thing.
You know, it's a call center. I don't know if this is a first or a blessing of the country. It always sounds great. It's a call center. I phone the department call center. We get a number. And that's the end. Boom. You know, I don't think we're complaining then. And they get
get the number. My father can only get a number. You know, I can never speak to anybody. You can speak to four friends or somebody will come back. The court says that if you run it sufficiently, fine. But it's a bit like computers, you know, that everybody got a computer. You know, you can do your recipes on a computer. Remember when they first came? That's everybody's in the middle of the laptop. That was before laptops in the kitchen, you know, doing your recipes. So, you know, a court says that it's in some ways a little bit of an instinct. But as soon as you ask the question out of the box, so I think great, the game boils down to capacity and efficiency, otherwise it's going to collapse. The thing can collapse again. I think the ideas are good and very interesting. I mean, being was involved prolifically. And if it can be implemented, we
got just a moment to include
everything. Can we have some order, please? Thank you. Oh, sorry, Mr.
I find this honorable something of the person.
Thank you. First, I'm not apologizing. I want to ask you one question. That is very important to me. And you as a communist ever thought about the Indians in China, they have the same views of this population. But why would they leave domestic market? Why they are so aggressive here trying to know other actual markets? That is what I want to say. Now maybe, you know, people know. With their huge domestic market, they are so aggressive. The government is putting in all kinds of incentives. No matter the people say they change their incentives today, because WTO, we know it's not true. Because when they change the wording to the WTO branded, right? But they know they have to, you know, to get more aggressive to increase the demand in the market and to attack other markets. But they must have some reason. And how we start out here, our domestic market cannot even compare with it. Cannot even compare a lot of countries. So I want you to think about it and give me your view. You know, think why India and China, which is a huge domestic market, and they are just so aggressive trying to attack others to get into another market. I think people really have to know that. So we know our efforts and how we're going to go. Number two, have you ever thinking that is the women's college, do we use the resources of this country, human resources? So maybe the question is not only to Europe, it's the export in industrial policy, and also in the old industrial policy, the franchise of this one. Can we think about our human resources? Because I'm an old kid, we're talking about service, we're talking about all these high tech, but to me, we are not here. We don't have education. Even in Europe, the Arab class, less than 30 to 40 years, defending themselves today, service industry, you know, to serve all the demand industry. And they make all these things for the children, where they are, the industry is not giving up, they're even paying the children. They encourage them to go outside and they're coming back, they do it up. But we don't have it. Talking about service charges, the people who are losing jobs now is not easy. Our society is very, very easy. Even the service discussion about Madonna, they don't want this old woman. It was a young kid. So what I'm saying is that we have to think about the human resources and our society and women. What kind of population we can love, and what kind of industry we can love, no matter how we hate the labor intensive with low end, no fear, no, we don't need any really the knowledge of that is it. We have to realize that government has to have law. But how? I think that is good to think about it, right? And the other thing that is now, talking about resources.
Sorry, excuse me, Honorable Chair. May I just get some clarity on the previous question? I mean, was it a question or a comment? I didn't understand the question in the second one.
No,
about human resources. Yeah. What is the question?
The question is that, have you ever thought about that is with our, the people in the population in our country, most of them, that need a job. If the people is not educated and uneducated rural area. So we need some kind of industry. Right, it's a 40 years. And that's before we are transformed to the other state. Then we can apply for 10 years. 5 years, we can't even change ourselves. That is what I'm saying. You see? You have to have a link to your other state, the industry policy, right? I'm talking about the element of capital resources, and you, I think that is on your very few cases, but I think you are pushing us to be completely busy, and it is very comprehensive, but very confusing, actually. However, I'm saying you are supposed to be in our resources. I think that in our country, the biggest problem is which recharge of the resources. Because of the wisdom has so many local, you must be a real one. So any policy is really action. We have to think about it. How we can access to those raw materials, which is not available in our country, to be more nearby. I'm going to give you some example. In the late 1970s, that is Taiwan was number one export of the leather jacket and the steel jacket to the U.S. and to Europe. Korea government decided they want this money. Because of the leather steel jacket is less investment in the machinery. If you cannot use old machines, you have to use old hammers, the wheels, you know, they can create a lot of jobs. They decided to take over. The government will decide they are central by one of the institutions. And they get all their manufacturers. When they need this order, they can go to them. They don't have to do a long term deal, you know, a big money to buy. 3 years. Achieving the whole market of Taiwan. They took all those the outdoor business out of Taiwan. If you ask everybody today, who is the stronger country to do outdoor than Korea? And with another 10 years, they can keep to achieve for everybody to do this level. But I'm saying is that we have to think about the same thing. We still have to think about exports. And if you know how to store the raw material in our country, and the one is not in your country, the government has to think about maybe it's not only because you have to cooperate with your other index policy to match your raw materials. The raw materials you need. The money comes about competition. The competition is not only raw materials. It's not only the label as you take on your paycheck. The one thing you must not know, the money government cycle is killing us. Because in here, I do some analyze. If you are going to do any single thing from the day one, the room is going to put them for you by carbon. I'm here to study the subscribers 9 months or 1 year. But in 5 years, they only 2 months. So that means our money content of every item is more expensive than the other. And that is, I think, is where you have to do it. How we get certainty of the money side. But I think it's going to look better than also, that is, we're talking about, you know, that is my colleague is talking about auto industry. I'm not against auto industry. I'm not against the textile industry, but it's two industries, auto industry. Auto industry is the never change. That is product needs market. It's uncreated the most, and market has had to affect to choose the good for us. So that is not easy because you can design all the accessories, all the school parts, you know, to the things you want. To use an automotive machine, you can only use all the spare parts you can change. And you look at all the motor industries, they are all motor parts. They don't take, you know, for 100 years, even outside chips. They never change. But they created one, like I showed. They don't make automotive. But textile clothes or shoes is not the same. You cannot create your own design you buy. You will create your own design, nobody wants to buy. That is, the buyer is the leader. The buyer gives you even your suit. And your suit looks at it and says, no, maybe your one is the one you can get the buy out of a nice issue. Your one you want, not this. You ask me why I don't know. That buyer, they are not after the head. You cannot own a human. I know the China comes out country to say our money is bank on, then it will be wrong. They know. It's wrong. It is not good for them. And the other thing I want to say, to export the system, the manufacturer is very important. Because if any of the manufacturers will only kill the domestic market without export borders, they can never be able to help the factory Should you act for market in general? Because I was in the market, I knew. You are not necessary to say whether your food is really competitive or not. That is what you do. But the way you send to the buyer, the better to have to think about the home. That's more important than anything. Your country is not. You see, in the Africa, all price used to be more than the Korea. But now, our price is lower. The only one reason, because of they say the people in Africa, they think second source is the subject in Germany. And if they are not willing to be part of it, you know. So I think that is very, very important for this policy thing. I just want you to say one thing. There's one thing that is one of my colleagues from public enterprise in the Dominican Republic. Have you anybody come up with a name? If you go to next time, go to Hawaii. If you in Hong Kong, for example, our Taiwan, in the market, in the job market, it's not very bad. Can I say? It's so big, but I don't know. I said, look at that. She asked me to come. She come to me. She asked me. She asked me. We have so many names. What can you do? I look at you. She can export home in the whole Asia. For 6 months, he only buy 1 kg. How many pounds is the next? He might even have some, he must be sold at 100 pounds. He must have some. If they really want to help the small business, they might be thinking about his dream. This is very big in the whole world. They might even provide him with all the raw materials and give the old guy.
In the sense that it's a very big document, it's a complex, and amongst other things, it also tells how to use and talk to other policies. And I think also, given that we've already been told that actually it was developed sometime earlier, but I remember getting this document from today's Wednesday. I got it yesterday. It means I got it last week still. There is a cause for concern from my side. Just a comment I would like to come up with a point. But at least the documents that have been brought far earlier. Can we have all of these very much can we have just some order? I know there's a list of figures, but please raise the system. Can I ask you to respond to the three questions? Because they are equivalent to 10 people. They have questions for you. We'll have to take it step by step. But I suppose we'll also be handling that question as a
contact institutions by the
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. In the absence of the Honourable Member that proposed the first question, I will, with your indulgence, go backwards. So maybe take Honourable Chang first. I think most of what you said were comments, so I'll note those comments. You asked the question, why do China and India export? Well, I don't know if I'm the best placed person to answer on policy directives on the part of other countries, but I can just hazard a guess that most countries export to be integrated in the global trading system. You import and export, that's just globalization and that's just the mechanics of trade. So without going into too much detail and wasting time and hypothesizing why the Indians and Chinese decide to export, I cannot comment. What I can tell you is that in South Africa, we want to export. We have to export because we have a small economy. We are endowed with great natural wealth, mineral wealth. And this was a decision, in fact, that was taken very early on. There was a document in 1992 put out by the ANC called Ready to Govern. And in Ready to Govern, the analysis is sound. And it says that South Africa as an isolated country cannot survive. That is why the previous regime collapsed, despite all its efforts to remain economically alive. So with a small market, but endowed with huge abundance of mineral wealth, exporting was an imperative. So integration with the global economies was an imperative that the South African economy undertook, and that is why we export. However, because of the traditional structure of this economy, where all the economic assets rested with a few players, that is why we have a small exporter base. Our challenge today is to increase the exporter base by driving competition and by expanding the manufacturing base. You asked about labor-intensive industries. Now, clearly, that is something that is enshrined in our industrial policy. It is also a critical component of the Accelerated and Shared Growth Initiative. And in that context, an industry which you are very well familiar with is clothing and textiles. Now, I disagree completely with your analysis of a global situation on clothing and textiles, because your references are dated. Your reference to the Korea-Taiwan model is going back to the 60s, and the world has changed drastically since the 60s. The same tools that one had at one's disposal then are not available at one's disposal today. We do have a customized sector program, and we do have, but of course, I mean, I also know the context, because you have a particular interest in this area, so I know the context from where you're coming, and I know the history of it, but suffice to say that we are cognizant of the contribution of labor-intensive industries, and we do have a program to, even on the exporter program, if you look in the presentation, we are concentrating on promoting labor-intensive industries in geographically in marginalized areas in South Africa. So there's a program that we are working with the Deputy President's Office and the CISA and the Cooperatives Program to promote our cultural and craft industries as well, which are clearly labor-intensive. So we are cognizant that we have to have a mix between the high-tech manufacturing sectors, but also those sectors that can absorb labor quite strongly. Honorable Lavaskasni, you raised a number of questions. Thank you for them. Capacity on implementation. Capacity is an ongoing challenge in government field. In TISA, the division that's responsible for implementing this, we have a vacancy rate of 11% at the moment. So we are addressing, and on an ongoing basis, we are addressing the issue of capacity. I can assure you, sir, that there is not a single post that is kept vacant in the DTI. I can speak for the DTI. Not a single post is kept vacant on ideological grounds. So I'll leave that point there. The MIDP cost benefits. There are a number of studies that have been done in this area. There's a report by a gentleman called Frank Fletcher from Canada who suggested that the MITP was not working as well as it should be, and there are other studies that suggest that they are. The reality is this, that the MITP program has helped to attract the major original equipment manufacturers in the world. There's no doubt about that. The greater benefit has actually come from the proliferation of component manufacturers, the downstream that can supply into that. And we have been expanding the component space on the manufacturing side. The MITP has resulted, as a consequence of that, in increased jobs on the ground. Now, there's not a direct cost to the MITP, it's an opportunity cost, because it's actually a credit that we provide them. So we do feel in the BTI that the MITP has served its purpose, and we feel that the more work needs to be done in this area so that we can reach an equilibrium in the sector. We are becoming quite globally competitive. In 1995, when the project was conceived, we had a vision of 1 million vehicles by 2020, total production. And remember, today we are already at 630,000 vehicles, and possibly by 2010 we may reach the 1 million mark. The vast majority of those vehicles are for export, and we are exporting to a diverse range of countries. So the MIGP clearly has shown benefit, and we will be announcing towards the end of the year the new MIGP program. So the MIGP program will remain, and we are quite satisfied with the cost benefit on that. The critical area you raise, and this is a major challenge, is the infrastructure for exports. However, the major backlog is in fact in the primary products area. It's getting the minerals, the coal, the iron ore from source to the port and then exported out. So a lot of work is being done there. Under the expanded public works program, under the infrastructure program, where in the infrastructure, government is going to be spending over 400 billion rand. A significant portion of that is for the upgrading of ports, rail, and airports. So we recently had the benefit of engaging with the Department of Transport on this whole infrastructure strategy, and we're very comfortable that the work that the Department of Transport is doing is going to help to alleviate some of the backlogs. Principally, again, the reason why we have these backlogs is that the growth of this economy has not taken people by surprise, but it has certainly surprised the limited infrastructure capacity we already have. The infrastructure capacity that we have wasn't designed for the scale of trade that we are currently engaging in. But more importantly, the project that we are doing in places like Kuka, that's an infrastructure program. We are creating infrastructure at a particular point with all the residual infrastructure, whether it's telecoms, electricity, rail, shipping links, so that manufacturing can be located there. Now, this is a new sort of infrastructure. We're not talking about upgrading the rail from the mine to the port, because we want to move away from primary product export. We want to move to beneficiation. So the industrial development zone that we are developing, coupled with the infrastructure expansion program, should address the issues of infrastructure backlog or capacity constraints. You asked the question, what are black companies doing to promote exporters? Well, it is not the job of black companies per se to promote exports, nor is it the job of white companies per se. It's the job of companies across the board in South Africa.
Not so much exports, you know, growing black business.
Yes. That's so, again,
we're emphasizing, sure, you know, the lack of.
Sure. But the point still remains.
Can we just back to your question again? I'm getting lost now. No, because one of our tasks at SMAE
and be
created and that building, the image in the product.
Yes.
And that applies to them.
So I find it from
S and E and B in the product. My question is, you know, the major black corporations are not trying to take over the newspapers. You know, what they're doing on the ground in the box to do that, is that not a focus area?
Again, my answer stands that it is not the job of black companies per se or white companies per se. It is the job of those that hold the control of the economy. Private sector. You see, growing the base of companies, be they SMEs, BEEs, exporters, or just to supply the domestic economy, is a function of the policy environment which we create and a function of the relationships in industry. So, it is not the job of the company that you are indicating necessarily alone. Incidentally, those companies are recently empowered, and if you were to assign a responsibility in the economy, the responsibility should rest with those companies that are traditionally already empowered and already have the assets and resources to be able to do so. Why they have not chosen to do so, that remains a mystery, and perhaps the question should be posed to big industry and big business in that regard. You, again, raise the issue, and correctly so. You point out that historically a manufacturer would manufacture X number of widgets, and then he'd discover that he's got an overrun, and then he'd try and run for markets. And that's exactly the problem in South Africa. That's exactly what we're trying to address, that we need to create a culture of export. Now, what is the culture of export? What is the export environment? That is where you have a sustainable position in the domestic market. You cannot export exclusively and not focus on the domestic market. That is not viable. Okay. There may be some nuances in certain sectors, but by and large, you need to have a sustainable base in the domestic market, and you need to have, because that's where you achieve economies of scale, that's where you achieve the competitiveness balance, and then you export. Those companies that feel otherwise have suffered. Those companies that feel otherwise, who feel they can export only, are closing down. So, the education programs we are developing, working with International Trade Center, working with CBI, working to develop an export culture is critical because there is a lack of an understanding of export culture. And there are few companies in South Africa, few, that can claim to have export excellence. Excellent. Very few. Skills, yes, that's an ongoing challenge. Of course, it's a critical program that government is addressing. We have the Joint Initiative for Priority Skills Acquisition driven by the Deputy President's Office. We are very cognizant of skills. And we are working, of course, with our various stakeholders, particularly Department of Labor, to help develop the skill shortage. However, the lack of skill does not mean we should not have an appropriate policy framework to enable the skills to flourish. So we have to, you know, work in tandem. These are parallel processes that have to carry on. So we are addressing, and we are very concerned about the skills issue. And how do we get more companies? That's really our challenge. We as I said, we have about 2,000 registered exporters. We need to grow the base to between 6,000 to 8,000 exporters. So we have to increase the number of companies that are export-ready, that can export, and that have the necessary skills and intelligence to be able to export to appropriate markets. We have a lot of companies in South Africa that export to traditional markets because that's what they've been exporting to for the last 20 years. And they've failed to actually latch on to the realities of the world that the emerging growth is in Asia, the emerging growth is in Latin America, the emerging opportunities in Africa. And it is getting more education, getting more intelligence out to companies that's going to help us to do that. I take your point on the call center. A call center is only as good as the operator. And we are quite determined that the call center we put up will be managed, that it will come under the direct control of TISA. It won't be a departmental call center, so it won't be trying to address and answer every question related to the economy. We will be focusing on investment and focusing on export. So anything related to the export value chain. And once the call center operator engages with your initial query, you will be passed on to one of the officials within the department. The reason why we're setting that up is because if we just have people coming in the front door, it's difficult for them to navigate. But on the phone, they will be directed to a person like Rian and his team who will deal particularly on exports and likewise on investment. Well, remember, I took your questions last as you were absent, so we now come to your questions. I'd indicated at the outset of my presentation that the presentation is dated 2006, dated as a draft, because we started this process in parallel with the industrial policy framework. And the industrial policy framework was recently adopted this year, and so on the heels of that, this document will be adopted. So this is no longer a draft strategy. This is a strategy that has been approved by the DTI. We talk about, on this slide, for example, the issue of concentration. We did deal with that as well. This is the current state. This is currently where our trade is, and we need to shift it, you see. As you can see, Europe is a sustain and maintain market, whereas the high growth markets is, in fact, in South America, in Africa, in the Middle East and Gulf, and Asia. So those are the markets that we are targeting. And that, again, comes to the issue of South-South cooperation. As you know, the India-Brazil-South Africa alliance creates the enabling environment for trade to occur. So now it's a matter of putting in the framework. But in spite of that, we have a preferential trade agreement with Latin America, with Mercosur. We concluded it some time back. But yet, only 1.4% of our trade is there. There is a sort of resistance almost within the current exporter community to even look at those markets. And we have had companies in South Africa tell us they're not interested in certain markets in Asia and South America. They're quite happy just to export to Europe and to North America. And so there's a significant amount of laziness amongst our exporter community currently. So those are the challenges that we are dealing with. That's why we want to expand. So the enabling environment is there. The political will is there. For example, we recently concluded maritime shipping agreements between India, Brazil, and South Africa to facilitate trade. So all the building blocks are in place. Now we actually need companies to come in and start taking up the opportunities that are inherent. Again, that goes with education. And probably the number one thrust of this strategy, I can say, is going to be education, education, education. Informing companies, helping them to get ready to move forward. You raised the issue about imports from Germany. Germany is the world's number one exporter globally. And of course, a large part of the South African economy is still entrenched in traditional ties and relationships. So the relationship with Germany as an export country, and it's mostly manufactured products, is we can only reduce that over time if we build our own manufacturing capabilities. And we just don't have right now a sufficient manufacturing base. In order to increase your exporter base, you basically have to increase your manufacturing base. You need more manufacturers in the fold, and more value-added manufacturers. As you know, the majority of this economy was dependent on the extraction and export of primary products, mining in the mining area. Today, mining contributes about 6% to the economy. 65% plus is manufacturing and services. So as we diversify and entrench ourselves in the new areas, we will then be able to reduce our dependency on imports from Germany. You pointed out that we did make the observation that in the past we were doing everything for everybody. You know, what I mean by that is that if anybody came to the TI and they said, I make a product and I'd like to export it, we would assist them to export their products. But now, based on the scientific model, we're able to say, hold on, your product is not viable for export in that particular market. You know, we can offer much more sound advice based on where, based on our matrix, country product matrix, which will suggest to us, based on our comparative and competitive advantage, which are the countries we should sell and which products we should sell them to. So we'll be much more focused. See. And you asked the issue around who provides the finance to assist companies to get export ready. It will be CISA, it will be DTI. It will be the range of our instruments, financial assistance instruments that we have. There's EMEA, the Export Marketing Investment Assistance Program, but there's a new program for emerging exporters as well. And of course, working with the IDC, as I mentioned in the presentation, where they'll provide support. And who supplies information on trade opportunities? That's going to come from our trade portal. That's the National Trade Information Service. As I mentioned, we will be providing... you see, in the past, we were not very well coordinated with getting the intelligence on the ground from our officials in foreign markets. Part of the challenge, as you raised, is because they were very junior officials and they possibly didn't have the correct and appropriate training. So we will be training them. In fact, we are working with Foreign Affairs on a new program because all of the 115 missions around the world will also promote. As you know, Foreign Minister has been saying that DFA should now concentrate on issues of economic diplomacy. In that regard, export promotion, investment promotion are going to be critical areas. So we'll be working quite closely. Within the new year, we should have a new program, a training program for our foreign economic reps that will go out. And we'll be relocating our offices in those high growth areas as DTI. But the DTI, in conjunction with partners like CBI, ITC, and other agencies around the world, will provide the sort of information that companies need to become export ready and become exporters. The issue of CEDA has come up in a number of questions, and CEDA is a partner that we work with. CEDA is an agency that provides advice. They do not provide finance. CEDA provides advice. They provide mentoring and advice. And to that end, we are quite comfortable, in fact, with the work that we have developed so far with CEDA, that working with CEDA, working with the Council of Trade and Industry Institutions, like SADS, like the CSIR, as a value chain, we are able to assist and develop our exporters. So we are quite confident about the role CEDA can play in this regard. Honorable Chair, I trust I've addressed all the questions.
One issue is agricultural quota.
Yes, sorry, yes.
The EU, yes. That is what we have done, that the EU dropped now.
Let me just make the point that on the issue of the exports on ostrich meat, particularly as you raised, this is not something new. This is ongoing, and we have mechanisms in our relationship with the EU to address this. We have bans on their product from time to time because of the foot and mouth disease that they've had. Sometimes have banned products on our fruits even. Black spot was an issue that was raised a couple of years ago. And we do have mechanisms to deal with these. And these are being addressed. In fact, later this month, we have the Joint Cooperation Council between the EU and South Africa. And these types of issues are dealt with. These are sanitary and phytosanitary issues. There is no impediment per se. There are mechanisms to deal with the access issue. And I cannot comment on why NDA, if you suggest, I don't know this to be the fact, but if you suggest NDA have not submitted the information, I cannot comment on that. But we can certainly get an update for you, and if you have a particular interest in this, after this meeting I can get an update on the ostrich issue with the EU and supply that information to you.
Yes, that's one thing. The other one, I'm going to go back to Korea. I'm so stupid, you know, to use in Korea,
I live in Korea and I work only for 2 points. Number one, the data industry, they know they have a lot of unemployed people in unexpected. They try to find out what is the quickest way to create a job. Number two, they know the raw material is too far away. How are they going to secure to be quickly responsible for the raw material? That is my point. Okay? I'm not only using it, you know, what happened in 1970s, but I'm just saying that because the government knows on that kind of situation, the unemployment is uneducated people, and also the material is not next door. So they just say, I'm just using that example to make this thing. The other one is about, you know, why they do the export. That is my personal opinion. Because most of countries, they know to do export is another way to create a job without compromise the domestic market to push the small country who is doing domestic manufacture for domestic market, and that is why. That is in most of countries, they think that is very important because export, they encourage people, they tend to attack other countries instead of attacking each other inside of their own country. Because if you only concentrate on the domestic market, you don't let them attack each other. That is my, you know, it's a matter of opinion. It's just a comment, you know, for your
reference. I can only assume that some of your criteria affected on your the date. It is possible to write that enough. It is very helpful because the government is going to make the export process better qualitatively defined. It's time for a break because things are getting cold. But can I encourage people who will take you in rather than travel up with us to just take our seat and go
to the school? I would like to invite you to take the test in the financial for the test, you know. They you can make 100 or 700 tests, but it's financial. You know, maybe then if you can look the people from the future can, you know, we have too many financial.
Thank you.
How do you like it?
It's fine, I like it.
And this is what, this is a Jethro Kaneko. And you know that if you go to...
I want to know, you guys have lots of pineapples, and you should take the recipe.
That is a good thing. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to be. You know, this is another that I asked, let me show you. How do you like it? There have been colors. Here there are some colors. No, that color is a secret. Because there's a September. Yeah, you're curious.
The presentation, I think it was.
I'm going to go to the hospital. Competitiveness is very important, but I know that also Thank you very much, Captain. Thank you, Captain. I won't be long because other questions have been asked.
of it. But let me just look at your key observation on page of slide number 19. You say the strategy should focus on what the DDI could realistically influence. Amongst others, you are saying focus on key high growth markets rather than doing everything for everybody. And you go further to say, let's select from last, grow the exporters base, particularly SMEs and black exporters. And as you have correctly said that we are on an economy that is in transition. I agree with you. Now, on the strategic vision, you envisage that by 2014, that South Africa from a global competitive base directed by the best practice industrial policy and sector development strategies will be able to maintain market shares in traditional markets and substantially increase market shares in prioritized new high growth markets through aggressive marketing and a larger exporter community. That includes less exporters from marginalized and depressed areas of South Africa. Now, the economic environment in the previously disadvantaged areas, the geographic marginalized and economically depressed areas that we are talking about, one does not have infrastructure. As I'm talking to you now, there are no warehouses, they don't have resources. There's a lot that still needs to be done. And if we are talking about developing SMEs in those particular areas, nothing has started yet. Now, and we have this draft strategy in front of us today. And we know that in every policy that are made, research, there's information, planning, and implementation, that takes a long time. When do you expect to be in a position to implement this, especially in the areas of SMEs? How do you plan to do this, developing these geographically marginalized areas? Who are your partners in developing this area? Now, how does this strategy relate to the integrated shared growth initiative of South Africa? How do you relate to them? Because to me, SIDA won't be able to do this. SIDA is not visible in this particular area. It is not visible. Even Kula is not visible in this area. I'm saying this because I'm from those areas, the marginalized areas of South Africa, the real marginalized areas. I'm not talking about a township or a town closer to Pretoria. I'm talking about marginalized areas in South Africa, that you are talking about here. There's no infrastructure at all. Developing those areas haven't started now, but you are talking about 7 years down the line from now on. How feasible is it? Is it practical? Are we going to, you know, I sometimes say I'm a little bit tired of this rhetoric, talking and strategies and policies that are not implemented. This must not be one of those policies that won't be implemented also. But I also wanted to find out whether, in reality, are we going to be able to have the, we don't have
the participation of businesses in this geographically marginalized and economically depressed areas now as I'm talking to you. But now you are talking about improving export participation in this area. How are you going to do it? Because we must not raise hopes to people on things that we are not going to be able to do. What are the plans that you are having in place now? What is FIDA doing in those areas? You know, it mustn't just be a question of developing another structure in the DTI or another entity in the DTI that will only focus on development in the urban areas and raise hopes in the rural areas that something is coming when nothing is coming. Now, the last question will be on page 15. You talk about to ensure that foreign offices deliver more effectively by a continuous of quality market intelligence, processing more high potential trade leads, managing national pavilions to best practice standards. My question would be, there is export as I'm talking to you now in South Africa. What is happening? What are the weaknesses there? If we are still going to ensure that the foreign offices will deliver more effectively, what is happening now? And how do you hope to improve this in the future? Okay. On the issue of the strategy that must focus on what you can influence, and you continue to say our export communities are not educated enough, and you talk about information and so on. Now, if I recall well, that FIDA is not doing the training, if ever there will be training. FIDA is also outsourcing. And if they haven't been able to train our people to make them have more information now, how long will it take them to be able to develop these people from now on, within the 7 years that we're talking about? Because we are going to work with foreign countries, people that have enough information and so on. How long will it take FIDA and other quality institutions to develop that particular strength that we want? I'm trying to skip other questions. Let me stop there for a second, because some of the questions have been asked already. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, let me make one point and offer as well that this is a very complex area, and we would, from the DTI side, probably regard this as a first interaction of many. And we stand at your disposal and to be asked to come to this committee at any time, with pleasure. And for individual members as well, if you have any questions, you know, we will be happy to deal with you on an ongoing basis at any point in time, because you are a very important stakeholder in providing us with guidance.
Just one last question, Peterson, to them now. Are you full time in this what is it? I can call it the wing of DTI, or you are a contractor? Yes.
No, I'm full-time in this area. I was appointed in April to head up, as DDG, to head up Trade and Investment South Africa, which is the division responsible for investment promotion and export promotion, quite simply. I spent six previous years heading up in the trade policy area, which deals with the trade negotiations and multilateral negotiations. But thank you again for these questions, and I think even a full day would not be sufficient for us to have a good engagement on these matters, so we stand at your disposal to come back at any point. Honourable Member, you asked the question about the two companies. I used an example of this is in 1998 we established the Export Councils, and the Export Councils were supposed to be an advisory body that represent industry and then work with government to promote export. And unfortunately, because of the structure of our export in the past, most of these export councils simply sort of they became mouthpieces for a small number of companies in South Africa. And their focus was clearly only on Europe and North America, which was our historical paradigm. And when we said that we are going to India, we opened it up to all the councils to say, go and get your members, we're going to go to India. In 2005, this was in 2004 that I spoke to them, and they came back and said, no, only two companies are interested. Now, it had to do with a number of things. Firstly, it had to do with a sort of bias that those companies have towards India, for political or other motivations. Secondly, it had to do with a lack of knowledge. I found it very surprising in 2004 that I be asked to motivate why we should go to India when the conventional wisdom was already showing that India is the world's largest middle-class market. India was the world's largest emerging market. The whole world was running to India, yet the South African export community was still saying, well, we're not too sure, convince us. And we had some very robust discussions and engagements there. Now, that is a lack of the export councils were not fulfilling their mandate. The export councils became lobbyists for the interests of the companies rather than to direct them. Because we picture that export councils should actually be forecasting the horizon. So if you have a ship, there should be the chaps on the top of the pole looking at the horizon or looking out for icebergs, you know, trying to navigate the chart, showing the changing way of the world. But they weren't doing that. So this year, we put them on notice, and we said that you must motivate why you should exist at all. We have 28 councils, all white. Every one of the council members is white. There's been no transformation. So one of the first initiatives I took when I took over this job was to put the councils on notice, to put them on a transformation agenda, and drive them to performance management. So each of the councils now is in that phase where they will be providing sort of motivation as to why they should exist and why they should be funded by the DTI and what are their strategies going forward. And in fact, when they gave us the strategies, there was a complete disjuncture between the strategies that we thought they should be pushing and the strategies they thought they should be pushing. They were still concentrating very much on Europe and North America at their own peril. And this has got nothing to do with politics. The reality of the world is that Europe and North America are economies that are stagnant and not in high growth areas. They're in decline in some areas. Some European economies are growing at less than 1%. The American economy is going through major turmoils and upheavals. Yet, economies that are growing at 8 and 9% are the ones that we should be linking towards because they have the greatest absorptive capacity. So, we are getting more focused in that area. So,
can I have seven clarifications, Mr. Chair? Yes. Export councils. Are there more than one? Is it
28.
Council per industry?
Per industry. And then there are sub councils. So, for example, there's a metals council, and then you have the South African wire council, you have South African steel council, you have wines, you have fruit and vegetables. So within sectors, there are sub-councils as well. And there are 28 at the moment, and new applications come all the time for the creation of new councils. So why we only had two was because of a result of lack of knowledge, a lack of education, and a lack of transformation in their thinking altogether. And their role, instead of being advisory groups to industry and government, they became lobbyists for very few companies, because the model under which the councils are funded is a matching basis. So we provide about 500,000 rand in the system, and industry provides. But in steel, for example, there's one major player. So invariably, you always found the views of the major players coming through, and they ended up being lobbyists. So we're saying that the councils should not be lobbyists. The council should advise for the good of the whole sector, not for the good of a company. The observation that we made in the presentation about a lack of integrated export information services relates to that. It's not on the whole strategy. So you're right. I mean, the presidency is very clear, and there's a lot of integration, but on the export information service, where do you get the information? You can come to TISA. You can go to Westgro, you can go to Chambers, there are all different places where the information was located. That process wasn't integrated. And what you want to do is try and provide an integrated place where you can get all this information, so you're not running to different places. So that is an area that we found was lacking in coordination. Part of the challenge was, and I'll be the first to admit here, that historically, over the last 5 years, TISA, the division which I'm now heading, did not have a DDG, did not have a head for 4 years. And as a result, there was a lack of coordination between national, provincial, and local. Now, we have institutionalized the relationship where we meet regularly with all the provincial agencies and the major metro promotion agencies. So we are talking in a much more coherent way with each other. How is TISA organized? TISA, I don't know if we're able to maybe throw it up here on the screen. The mandate of TISA is primarily promotion of investment and exports. So it's a very simple mandate, and a smaller element is the management of our foreign offices. So within TISA, I'm the deputy DG of TISA, and I have a chief director, a directorate for exports, and a chief directorate for investment. On the export side, Rian Maru, sitting here to my right, is the chief director responsible for export development and promotion. So there's two tasks. One is to promote exports, and the other one is to develop exporters. And there we have it. So there's a director for export development, as you see in the red, and a director for export promotion. The director for export development is responsible for providing the trade information services. That's the information, honorable member, that we were trying to get coordinated and make sure that there's coherency and integration in our information. The Trade Opportunity Center, the Export Council Secretariat, so that director deals with the Export Councils, and the Small Exporter Development Program, that comes under the Directorate for Export Development. On the right in the green, export promotion is done, and we have those mechanisms through conducting missions, outward missions, pavilions, and export promotion. The missions, again, have incentive management, as do the pavilions. That's where we provide the financial tools. Now, we can go further downstream in all of those areas, but there's an integration with CEDA, with the South African Bureau of Standards, with the CSIR, and other relevant agencies based on the sectors that we work with. So all the councils, in fact, are integrated into those areas as well. These are all fully resourced, and we have a we have in this whole area we only have two vacancies at the moment. So capacity-wise, we are not challenged. We have the capacity to execute what we are saying we can. In fact, by the end of this month, we will be making a submission to the Director General for additional resources in investment and export area as well, to expand our scope. Additionally, the foreign offices, right now we have 43 foreign offices in 36 countries. And as has been said before, Department of Foreign Affairs is going to be concentrating on economic, 60% of the work will be on economic work. So, in that effort to coordinate with DFA, because one of the criticisms that has been leveled against us is that sometimes DTI and foreign affairs do not seem coordinated, particularly in our international endeavors. And that is a fair criticism. So, to that end, we are now working with foreign affairs. Now, as I said, we have 43 offices in 36 countries. By the time we come up with a new plan with foreign affairs by early next year, all the foreign missions, 115 embassies around the world, will also conduct economic work. So we will be increasing our presence from 43 to 115. Then that brings us back to the question of DTI. Where should DTI be located? If DFA is going to be in 115 countries, where do we go? We are going to go into those high priority key markets where we can unlock the potential for growth. So we will have a number of offices to complement the DFA establishment. We are developing a new training program that speaks to all these issues that Honorable Member Gladly raised earlier about junior officials or lack of training on the part of officials. And we are working with international organizations that have best practice mechanisms so that our foreign reps are truly qualified and capable to export South African products. Currently, foreign representatives, when they go abroad, this is a model, I'm not quite sure why it was like this, but historically, they would go to the foreign office. Once they arrive at the foreign office, in conjunction with the head of mission, they would develop a business plan. And sometimes, because you have so many different heads of mission, so many different styles of management, we had very conflicting sort of business plans that did not speak to our national objectives, and that's why there's a lack of coordination. Going forward now, all the foreign reps will have a business plan designed for them at home. 80% of their business plan will be designed at head office, and we will target. So we will say, in this country, these are the products that we are targeting for export. These are the companies we are targeting for investment. 80% of the time will be spent on that solely. 20% of the time will be at discretion with the head of mission to determine other areas. So we'll be getting a lot more focus with our planning. Honorable members, my left, you raised the issue of lack of infrastructure in depressed areas. You're quite right. And your understanding of depressed areas is the same as what we have. So you are quite correct that there is a major challenge in that area. What are we doing and how do we feel that we can realize some gains in the next 7 years? Well, part of the industrial policy strategy speaks to the issue of geographic spread. So that's one element of it. Asgisa also speaks to the issue of labor intensive food. The cooperative division within the DTI, within the Enterprise and Industrial Development Division, is also seized with this issue of creating employment and building capacity. Who are the stakeholders you work with? Clearly, as you correctly indicated, CEDA and other DTI agencies do not have a footprint in these areas. And to this end, the cooperatives unit works with NGOs, with CBOs, with community-based organizations. And if I can give you a practical example of what I'm talking about, there's a project right now that is being driven through the Deputy President's office called One Municipality, One Product. That is an example where We are looking at products that each municipality can have as a showcase. And these are examples that we have looked at in other parts of the world. In Thailand, for example, they have a project of one village, one product. And this is to promote the integration of rural areas into the mainstream economy. We have a program right now modeled, again, driven through the Deputy President's office. This is modeled on the Indian model of cottage emporiums, where the many different states in India are represented in the capital, for example. So all, they have a place where all the states can come together and people from those states, from rural areas, can sell their wares. So it's providing the infrastructure. So to this end, we have to realize economies of scale. So the DTI intervention is going to be to assist in the procurement of raw materials. There was the issue that Honorable Chang raised about raw materials. If you have one hide, you can't really make enough turnover. By the time you sell it, you can only buy one more. So providing access to raw materials, procuring on a mass scale, providing quality assurance and management, and helping products to become market ready for export. And clearly, this is going to be in the cultural craft area and also labor intensive areas. We are also looking at locating specific sectors in these areas so they can absorb employment capacity. We will be looking at, for example, in the forestry and pulp industries to locate employment in the rural areas. And it's a program that is ongoing, and we do hope one of our major milestones is in fact going to be 2010. So we won't wait till 2014 to see whether we have any success. By 2010, we should be able to gauge the success or failure of our program and our initiative. But it really involves engaging with non-traditional partners, like community-based organizations, church groups, and NGOs. I've spoken to the issue of how do we improve foreign offices. This is going to be a combined DFA and DTI strategy. And the training for exporters, it will be done not by CEDA alone. CEDA is one of the partners involved in that whole value chain. We are engaging with agencies from around the world that have best practice in this area, that have been very successful exporters, and to come in and develop training programs. But it will be with external agencies, it will be with CEDA as one of the agencies, it will also be with the DTI and the DTI family of institutions. Honorable Chair, I trust I have answered the question, unless I missed something else.
Yes.
that's the question of charity. Remember, I referred to this draft, which you said is no longer a draft. It's your strategy now. I think if I understood you well, you said. Now, the issue that I referred to, he has not been really attended to. I referred to page 54 and I referred to page 52. To face yourself, how do you intend to deal with this challenge that is referred to, in particular, the weaknesses that have been identified here, on the correction that was talked about 182? We are listing the weaknesses there, and also refers to your small medium size enterprise, which I think has been a focus of the IT promotion. Now, I think we need to give the address and begin with that. The other issue that you have just raised, by way of example, which I think one of the critical issues is re-raising the IT report. Around these exports and imports and all this. Your steel and cement. I think you are well aware that out of this, my economic congress, 2010, that in the stadiums that are being built now, there is a real shortage of steel and cement. And I was told that, in fact, China was one of the countries who wanted to give us more cement and all this. Then I'm raising this in the context of what these companies are beginning to do. This was exposed by the competition board around the agriculture, the bread price and all that. Now, if it is disseminated, there might be a collision of the company in terms of keeping up the price. I don't know whether in terms of your area of operation you do really test that, whether these companies are not going to exploit the situation that the South African government at all costs has to get this data at all costs. And because of that, therefore, they are going to exploit the situation. Maybe you can use it to talk to our to the end so that we can begin to understand whether the team and also a cooperation or a relation between yourselves and the teaching structure looking at this issue. Because I can tell you now, which is raised before, that the price which has gone up now in terms of the steel and cement, even after the stage has been completed, the price is not going to go down. They're going to stay there. You know? And the building industry is very, very, very costly. Very, very costly. And the ordinary quarries are not going to be able to do that and access to the cement. It's well aware that most of the people even in very, very deep villages, they depend on this to build their own house in their self-business. And I want to say that we should talk about that. The last issue on page 11 in the slide, which is slide 22. If you look at the bullet point from the bottom there, let us provide slides with a clear understanding of the service offering available to importers and prospective exporters. We've been raising the question of the capacity and question of the infrastructure in the office. Which is where I'm becoming annoyed in terms of capacity. Because each and every person speaks, whether it's a minister or a functional, a DC or a DDC, the one thing is the question of capacity. Lack of capacity. Come on. For the past 18 years, you can't tell me there's a lack of capacity. I just can't tell you. I don't know if you want to listen to the question of lack of capacity. But as I already say, that the first year when we're in government reform, the first 5 years, of course, was a honeymoon. Everybody was a honeymoon. But the second 5 years, it was supposed to be wet to be done. You know? You can't keep on telling us about the lack of capacity. Otherwise, you must just, because really, it doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense to me. Because most of these strategies, if you cannot hear something to say, then for this time frame,
if you have got a lack of capacity in that particular area, they've got either 6 months or 1 year or 2 years or 2 months to address that. Then the next, after that time, you are able to say, no, no, there's no question of the lack of capacity. You are going to move. I don't hear that. Thank you, sir.
Just that one, like the purpose of health when you come in. Honorable David, the lack of capacity, where you will focus, is it on CISA, is it on CPI?
I'm talking generally, but that's why I said that even if there's a minister when he comes to speak, so that after that general, there's this question of the lack of capacity. That's to help them, help them. Even then, they raise that issue. Even if you look at this, you'll find that each and every place, this capacity is going to come in. Even the same person, right, that's the same.
And when you talk about capacity, you need to hear, is this capacity within CISA so that they can respond?
Even then.
Why? Within human capacity or general?
In general. You know, the human capacity or skill capacity of that is the most capacity issue.
Yeah. Gentlemen, I hope that helps you to be able to respond, because you see, this cut across various people, so it is natural. Because, as we all can sense, we're coming back to this. And we pick it up as he said, this is what he said about with regard to the status quo of the capacity. Now we can see that the driver is what is driving. Now how do we, down the line, you know, we'll be able to get there. And that's why I'm sort of engaging you, but encouraging you to respond more contact.
Thank you. I just want to
ask
you a question about the I think that is from the, I think Mr. Bosch, you know, so a month ago, I started to question all the departments to ask, all the department heads, are you on your contract? You know, that is maybe one of the ends of this less capacity, because I was very surprised to find out a lot of the government, you know, these important positions, they are under contract with the supervisors, this is put on my service, you know, and a lot of them, they don't even know the future, up to the last 3 months. So if I were them, I would start looking job the second year. Because I don't know where my future. You know? And but this is why I also make some statement, you know, the statement in the house to say, I know government has to very seriously look at this one to say, if we are finding all the government officials, especially in the middle of the past, right? You must give them to have the second contract before their contract is going to expire 8 months before starting to negotiate with them and conclude with 6 months. So that they know. At least they know that if they were, if their job is secure. Because if you think about our job, we were also starting with the job. Right? And 3 years the government is really is training us and get better job outside. I mean, I don't think I'm stupid, but up to now, you know, over 4 years I'm in parliament and we're struggling for a lot of the subjects. So how do you expect someone that they come to the working in the government for 3 years and they must know everything? This is, I think, is a favorite. And I do think that, you know, I said that I was continually repeated to say, 3 to 5 years, I don't think that is really good content. People have come 3 years. And I was very surprised. Most of them, they get only 3 years. Okay, the other thing that is, I want to ask a question is that is on your page 38, we're talking about the gravity model and also this, the other, I can't even pronounce it, Shewer, what do you call it called? Shewer or Cover?
Kuiper.
Cover. There's only one thing I have to ask you, because I don't understand, you know, you're not going to be able to be in charge. Am I right? You said, you know, it's a university of this university, or university of that university. You see, I don't quite understand this one, because when people ask me, you know, what I'm actually in university, you know, I went there, university is economic and philosophy and logic. You see, there's one thing that I'm not debating with a lot of the professors. It is one thing is that whatever learn a book, it doesn't equal to the other people. So sometimes they use it not because they are not, they're not, it's not good, but because every single thing has this exception. So I'm not so sure that is why these two jobs, you know, that is the job they did, that they are given to the university to be charged to give the upgrades, you know, the information to analyze it. That is what I would like to ask. The other thing is very good. On page 44. You see that it is, we're talking about LDC. And this is also a question that we said could be extremely separate, very important. You know exactly. You know, and we're talking about, you know, when we do the bilateral or monetary level, when you do this negotiation, is our government thinking about the LDC country? Because SACU, you know, SACU, we have LDC, we have developed countries. And when we are with Europe, Europe only owns the EU, the only developed countries. I asked the same question today. You know, even in a different country, developing countries, no? But you know, the label is not there. When you do this, the industry, a policy thing, negotiating, they say no. They do adjust themselves to see some is a less, some is more. So I want to understand it. When you do this one, have you think about that is we do have the LGBT country. In the instance, and not the only one. But after starting, I think that if we have numbers of them, how will we deal with it? Because we cannot ask them and send them with us there in the same level. That is my question. Thank you.
I think I'll be fair enough to allow other people to have a fight. May I have mine as well now? the first one is your export strategy is a 3 years. I certainly hope I'm related to what the earlier said. Just to understand that 3 year period. But also, does it relate, and if so, how does it relate to the type of overall medium-term framework? I know it's a new tool, but obviously, one assumes that it just synchronizes and is harmonious with the overall. Another area, the policy context, I'm fairly interested in that. Because we promised us an export strategy sometimes, one tried to sniff around on a number of areas. And I came across with the assistance of Parliament recently, they think that Brazil export promotion is mainly a key element of Brazil's key trade policy. Now, in terms of political coherence, one is quite interested to know how does the cost strategy contribute to policy. In fact, one thing why I was keen that is known that one of the areas that we see as CCI is to develop policy. Do we have the document where we can take in our state policy? State policy, one sees a couple of core issues or three issues in a sense. I'm just provoking that. It takes negotiations as you said, it comes to the DC, it's currency exchange, it's incentive, licensing, imports and transport, subsidies, transportation of foreign exchange, and even to an extent, pay for last money. I'm just rambling, I mean, that's right, you know. And in a sense, one sees export strategy as it has been picked up by itself, is a big strategy that it's one of the cardinal components of our education policy. That's not also an interest, you know. Yes, you articulated it nicely as how you bring the interface and shock to the industrial policy. Now, I'm swinging around this. And where is it? And another area is around foreign policy. You see, if you look at the actual political isolation of South Africa, it talks a lot. Because there were some of our friends during the party time who raised what is sort of linked up to now. Maybe there is a comment, but you see, to an extent, the export strategy, you know, sensitive to foreign policy. Among other things, operationally, working with
DFA in anything, but to set up offices. But I'm saying that everything that's high level, I think, you know, just infrastructure, taking up how some of the areas in the forest. About that, we have drain change. One way of the south operation. That's one point. The other one is that both the legacy for the government foreign policy and also both parliament international they say prioritize us. Now let's pursue those things. To what extent does it stop? I know you said now you've got to check on high potential and high area, but these are the realities that come on board. I think it was just another thing. For the point you just said, just a little bit in various policy issues. When you look at the extra-cultural global change, one of that change to know how many countries face the other wise. One again, I discovered that the human face is under the position. One was to know why the trend in Chilmos and the export so corrupted. But the scene in Chilmos shooting up in October 2016 and in January 2007, they are on the negative. And also, with the time to strike up South African export, I look at the color and the one that sees the manufacturing tools and upper strand. One asks how is it so when you still talk of our manufacturing capacity or does that mean that no matter how many tools, the feed has been broken? Because that's a striking issue. With the regard to trade export destinations, trade import origins, there was an interesting trend that one noted in my comments. For instance, Yemen is our number four in terms of imports, and our number one in terms of imports. China is our number six in terms of imports, and our number two in terms of import. And then you pick up a couple of countries which you do not find because our export partners, but you pick up here, I think the first one is in France, Nigeria, Thailand, and Singapore. How was actually? And if you just comment on that, I would assume, particularly in the East Valley, one of the nations pick up from the export destination. I was almost going to ask you about the international export business, but I found that the design of the NES platform is highly commendable. I think amongst other things, we have to be monitoring, you know, the overall performance around that issue of export business, particularly when it comes to the promotion of tech, SME, the issue of but you said that the policy in the export group is enhanced competitiveness through industrial policy and sector development structure. The question was only
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Zali raised the issue of page 54, page 52, the weaknesses that we've identified, and we do feel that the strategy does address those weaknesses. We feel that as the weaknesses, we found that a lot of small companies are just not export ready. Making the product is not good enough. There are other steps in place before you can be ready to export. For example, just understanding the process, understanding the paperwork, how to do shipments, how to do clearing, how to do all the documentation. The product quality is not good enough. Because you can make a product and sell it in your village, in your town, does not necessarily mean that it is quite ready to be sold in markets across the world, because they have different requirements and challenges. So we feel that the export strategy does speak to all these weaknesses that we've identified here. You raised the issue of capacity, and there's a very particular reason why it is raised all the time. I'm going to speak about capacity in the context of CISA, DTI, and broadly. The capacity issue is going to be an ongoing issue for a very good number of reasons. The work of the DTI, for example, is work that is getting busier and busier and busier. We have more demands. We have more economic citizens coming up every day requiring our services. We have much deeper integration in the global economy. So the work is not getting less. However, we have a challenge, and maybe, you know, this speaks to what Honorable Chang was raising about tenure, certainty of employment and things like that. But in the DTI, particularly, what we feel is that people spend a bit of time in the DTI and then they are poached by the private sector. So we lose a lot of people just when they are at a critical point where they can contribute to the department. They are taken up by private sector on basis that we cannot compete with wages. We just cannot compete. But put that aside, national government has a much lower wage dispensation than the provincial and even metro, for example. For example, my salary as a DDG in the national government is described. However, the provincial investment promotion agency, which technically come under the national, some of them earn twice as much as what we earn. So this is a challenge, you know, and this is something that perhaps public service administration needs to address. There's a great disparity also within the provincial agencies. So the CEO of Westboro, for example, earns a particular salary, whereas you might find the CEO of a similar agency in Eastern Cape earns double of what he earns. So there is that challenge, and the issue of contracts and permanent employment. The most members of the public service qualify for permanent employment. However, DDGs and DGs are on contract because our positions are linked to the political cycle as well, because there are cabinet appointments. DDGs and DGs are appointed by cabinet, so you cannot make them permanent. So the issue of also, we don't have, for example, in countries like India, for example, where you actually have a core of public service. You know, you actually have a whole industry of public service. We don't have that culture yet in South Africa. We have public servants who then go into the private sector. They may come back into the public service. So we are still trying to rationalize. And these are functions of an economy in transition. We anticipate over time we should reach equilibrium, and you will have a career pathing, particularly for public service. Private sector will be separate. But at the moment, there's a sort of a revolving door exercise. The issue of cement and steel, interestingly, you raised those two examples. There is an unprecedented demand for cement and steel, not only in South Africa, but worldwide. Worldwide, there is a shortage of cement and steel, therefore prices are going up. For our part, we have come down very strongly on the steel producers who seek to use import parity pricing, for example, to drive prices up. So to that end, we have reduced the duties, we have allowed foreign steel to come in, and also we, as a state, are committed to the establishment of a second steel operator on the scale of Mittal. So that will bring in more competition. However, those will take a couple of years to come online. So what do we do in the meantime? So that's the challenge. Similarly with cement. There are only a handful of cement companies, I think three, major cement companies.
Why the guy is Cisco?
Cisco has been sold, it belongs to Mittal, the private company. It has been done some years ago. Cisco no longer exists.
And they don't have Cisco,
so that's the opposite of what you're suggesting. That is not going to be an option in the current policy framework. But cement, there are three major producers, all of whom are producing at maximum capacity and importing. And we are bringing on stream more cement plants, but they will only take 18 months before they can start providing products to the market. So we are importing, but there is a global shortage of steel and cement anyway. But the competition policy and the Competition Act is very specific that we will not tolerate collusion We will not tolerate cartels, and we will do all in our power to break these practices. And Wu Chang, I think you made some comments about capacity and the contract issues. I think those are not for comment. You made the issue about universities for models. The universities do not manage anything. We work with the universities as partners to develop the models. So the intellectual capacity, theoretical intellectual capacity resides in the universities, and we work with them. The Kuipers University, the Kuipers model is based on a Belgian professor. We work with the University of Pretoria, University of Northwest, and the DTI collectively to develop the model that we have. But we manage the model. We manage the model. The issue of SACU and SADC, this export strategy is a South African export strategy. For the purposes of trade policy and trade negotiations, we work as a collective in SACU. Now, the Regional Industrial Development Strategy speaks to the industrialization of the region. However, it would be remiss of South Africa to, it would be almost arrogant of us to develop an export strategy for the region. I think Botswana must develop their own export strategy, Lesotho must develop their own, but within the context of a integrated trade policy. This is a South African trade, export strategy that we are presenting. So, as you've indicated, Chair, this is a document that we had concluded last year, so it is a work in practice already. We already have some gains. As I indicated, our target was to have 100 new exporters in the fold. We have 170 so far this year. So there are some gains. But this is directly in line with DTI's MTEP allocation, because we had this strategy already in mind when we made our funding proposal and application. However, I've been informed that the Treasury has not acceded to our request as a department on our budget request. We discovered this yesterday, but we will be now engaging next week again with Treasury to motivate for the funding for our program, which we see as a critical program, particularly in this area. Very important.
Any reasons that they gave?
None that we have. No. But this is a department as a whole. On our budget request now. I will be meeting our minister at 1 o'clock, and hopefully I'll get some more insight into that decision. Excellent point you make, Chair, about the coherency between export strategy and trade policy. The export strategy has to be rooted on two pillars, industrial policy and trade policy. Otherwise, we will be making the mistake of being incoherent. So, we do take on board the trade policy. The trade policy is enshrined within the industrial policy. But I do understand from my colleague Xavier Karim that he does have a document or a policy framework that he's prepared to come and present to the committee, that can be accommodated in the near future, I hope. But we do, for example, take the outputs of our model to inform our negotiators in terms of what are the products we want access for. Because there are products that they may not know because industry does not ask for it simply. And the lead-lag process of informing our position is not comprehensive enough, because it only speaks to the limited capacity and the limited role players we currently have. So this model that we have developed on our product matrix will go a long way to informing our negotiators on the market access, the products that we need to have access in. So yes, we do have a trade policy, and it does inform our export strategy. The slide up there speaks to the market access that we have. and that we plan to have. So we definitely, because the trade policy will tell us. Okay, the matrix will simply tell us that these are the products we can sell to these countries, but it doesn't tell us about the barriers, the standards, all those areas you raised. So the trade policy should inform that. And in fact, we have, in conjunction with NEDLAC, developing a document on non-tariff barriers in our critical market so that we can address them. India, for example, is a very complex market. Tariffs is one issue, but then you have registration matters at a national level, at a state level, and understanding those is very complex. So we are putting together a document that can inform us on how we can, you know, best standardize our regime, how we can work with the standardization bureaus in other markets to deal with the issues of, as Honorable Zali raised, about the exports and agriculture. Those are all elements of the trade policy. So we have to work in tandem. Honorable member has left now, but the issue she asked about was the impact of not having a DDG in CICA in a period of time. The impact was the lack of policy coherence. We were working in silos, and there was not an opportunity to get this kind of alignment. Perhaps because I came from that environment, I have a better appreciation for the need for that alignment between trade policy and export strategy and investment strategy. So we are working in that regard. Brazil is a shining example. And I'm glad you raised that, because Brazil is a country that sort of we want to look at to emulate their model. But they don't have the challenges we have in terms of concentration in the economy in the same way that we have. They don't have issues of cultural and political bias towards certain markets in the way some of our operators have in this country. So that is a very good example. And we would also want to move in that direction, where trade policy and export strategy are one, basically, the working tandem. One serves the other. And they shouldn't be in isolation of each other. So yes, the idea is, yes, export strategy can and should support trade policy and vice versa. Chair, you raised the issue of manufacturing. You know, we have increased in manufacturing, it is high, but yet we still speak about limited capacity. But of course, we're working from a low base. So the trajectory is high, but it's only in a few sectors. The potential is far greater than what the actual is. So we are still, we still have limited capacity, and that is reflected in the few number of exporters that we have. We have 2,000, as I said, registered exporters, whereas we need between 6,000 and 8,000. And then we would see our manufacturing and services exports increase far greater. When we talk about the preconditions for export, industrial policy in the broad sense, plus the sector strategy, industrial policy in itself as a policy is not sufficient. As a precondition to export, industrial policy in itself as a document is not sufficient. But there are a lot of other areas on supplier inputs, the prices of inputs, the cost of logistics and the supply chain. All of these areas need to be brought down for us to become competitive. And the sector strategies actually speak to that. So within a sector strategy, we can actually say that in this sector, the impediment to growth is the concentration of the raw materials, the high price of inputs, the cost of transportation. For example, it is far more expensive to ship something to Nigeria than it is to ship it to Russia. And that is a function of historical shipping lines and the ownership of those shipping lines and the focus on traditional markets. So that is why, as India, Brazil, and South Africa, recently we have signed a maritime shipping agreement. So the agreement is in place. for any entrepreneur who wants to come in and start creating ships to do the shipping in as a corridor between India, Brazil, South Africa. So we have to create the enabling environment, which we have done through these agreements, but we still need ships. And again, there's a shortage of vessels in the world because trade across the world is booming. It's almost very difficult to book a vessel for selling the product. South Africa is very strategically located. 50% of global trade passes under our shores. 50% of global trade passes under the South African, under our shores. Yes? We need to be able to get them to stop and fill up products, offload products and fill up products and take them to various destinations around the world. So it is often true and it's said that South Africa is not a very big market. South Africa is a small market, yes, very true. But we are on the way to all the major markets of the world. And again, it's a lack of capacity in that area, a lack of shipping infrastructure, just as one example. So there are many preconditions, but they are all enshrined within the individual sector strategies, which have their own limitations. The incentives, Honorable Chair, they are ready. The incentive regime is under review. However, the programs that have been suspended are the SMEGP program, but the program that we have for, thankfully I'd like to say, for exporters are unaffected. In fact, we are adding a new program, the new funding, which has been approved for emerging exporters. EMEA is a program for existing export-ready customers. But we have a new program for emerging entrepreneurs. And I'll just give a little example of how we operate in this area. I received a call on Monday morning. 11 a.m. on Monday morning, I received a call from a company who had received a very late invitation on Friday from the Mayor of London to participate in an event in the UK relating to beneficiation of jewelry and diamond industry. And this company, which is a very young, new company, wished to take some emerging designers to London, and the bill would have been prohibitive for that company to bear. And they came to us, and under the EMEA program, there are many restrictions and limitations, and we need to be 30 days in advance and things like that. But under the new program, we were able to process their application within 24 hours. And last night, five of these producers left for London, and tonight the others will leave. So this is a record for the DTI. That within 24 hours, we were able to turn around and support about half a dozen exporters, new exporters, emerging exporters, to go and participate in a major event in the UK. So the financial side and the incentive side are in place, and we are ready to roll out with those. And finally, we are trying to drive a policy coherency with the other clusters. This is a process that has been discussed in the economic cluster, and we work very closely in that area. At the moment, because traditionally there has not been sufficient coordination, or coordination has been based on personality, on relationships that one builds, we are now in the process of institutionalizing the stakeholder relationships within departments. So NDA, National Department of Agriculture, for example, is a critical stakeholder in that part, and we will institutionalize a relationship with them, so that we don't have these gaps, as Honorable Zali mentioned, where NDA has not reacted to requests from the EU at the expense of our exporter community. So we will work a lot more closely in that area. A lot of work has to be done still in this regard. And yes, the simple answer, the codes of good practice will form part of every aspect of that value chain. And that is something that, you know, we have to be strong and stay tight on and not compromise.
Very good. of course, once the money is taken, it's quite sensitive, it's quite upfront. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Changi, Ramla, and Food, and I from my side, from the field and supposed everybody that we should have a general workshop sometimes here that doesn't focus on this. Thank you for the stuff I lost again and how it leads to a lot of politics. A lot of input has been made today to those who range from experiences in general and global experience, like the Chinese region, as well as with your usual country, never had been. But I think also, if you can respond, we need a presentation on the stakeholders in India. Also, if you could relate as to how it relates to other economic policies or directly linked policies. Because it plays then the foreign effect of foreign policy. It's a very good thing. Not only in the negative sense, but they could even act. So if there could be a separate, that would be a thing we share, the right to share with, taking into account that we have the negotiation program, parliament and the whole budget. I'm sure that I see everybody nodding, and I sense that that gets support. It would show that on this item, then we have just one other small item. We have a set of minutes of the previous meeting. That is the second session that I'm told. They were distributed some time ago, where it is not updated to them, I just removed it some time ago to them, and they released some other adjustments to them. They get formally into the system of parliament. Can I get then a mover and a seconder for those ministries? Professor Tam, are you moving? And can I get a seconder? On that note, let me say I'm very grateful that my person who is to have a certain hope to achieve the standard of life is Chairman of the Board. Thanks very much for your community and the chance to begin to share an honest message. Everybody is about the fund, going over and above what we do in our economy domestically and just I trust and hope when you go and talk to your colleagues, I'd like to see to what extent shall it address marginalized interests in areas in the context of the process. Thanks very much.
Maybe in the future, with the policy,
thank you for the
You're welcome.
Thank you.
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 Thank you. Thank you.